It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Stacy, Jeff, and Ant are here, and man, oh man, have we got news. Elon Musk says, okay, I'll buy Twitter. I think it's all a clever ploy by the Delaware judge. We'll talk about the Supreme Court. There's a couple of cases on the docket that will affect Twitter and some new Google products as they get ready for a big event tomorrow. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 684, recorded Wednesday, October 5th, 2022. Like a shiny Tic Tac. This Week in Google is brought to you by 8Sleep. Good sleep is the ultimate game changer. And the pod is the ultimate sleep machine. Go to 8sleep.com/twig to check out the pod and save $150 at checkout. 8Sleep currently ships within the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and select countries in the EU and Australia. And by SecureWorks. Are you ready for inevitable cyber threats? SecureWorks detects evolving adversaries and defends against them with a combination of security analytics and threat intelligence directly from their own counter-threat unit. Visit SecureWorks.com/twit to get a free trial of Taegis Extended Detection and Response, also referred to as XDR. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from, well, mostly Elon Musk, I'll be honest with you. We're going to try our darndest. That's Stacey Higginbotham. Stacy on IoT.com. Do you like how I worked the mic on that when I yelled, yay, Stacy? I got way off mic, just like Adele does.
I felt like you were far away.
Yeah, I'm doing the Adele thing. I watched her on TV, and she goes, you know, someday I'll always love you, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you probably don't want to be in the receiving end of a full Adele belt.
No,
I imagine it's overwhelming.
That's a hell of a belt. Stacy on IoT is her fabulous website. Get the newsletter there. It's free. Check the events. And, of course, subscribe to the IoT podcast Stacy does with Kevin Toefel. And I can guess what that's going to be all about this week. I can guess, but we'll get to that in a moment. Then, to my left, the Leonard Tao Professor for Journalism and Animation, the Jürgen Habermaser Professor at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Habermas. Jürgen Habermas.
Brand new. It just arrived today.
Yeah. Is it in German?
Ein neuer Strukturwandel der Öffentlichkeit und die deliberative Politik. Yeah, so I have to know what this says. I really do. It arrives, and then I finally discover the translation.
Oh, nuts. But this is good. It'll be good for practicing your German.
Yeah, it's good for your brain.
It makes me look smart. Yeah,
Michael, who studied, he's like in German 4 now, gets a German magazine called Der Fenster.
The window.
The window into German land. It's fun. Yeah, it's a good way. Oh. Reading German's a good way to practice. Somebody does not need to practice his photography. Mr. Hands-on Photography himself, Ant Pruitt.
Oh, I definitely need to practice my photography. Sir.
That's how you stay good. Not just get good. How you stay good.
I thought you were going to have to practice your German, Ant. I was like, wow.
Do not practice your German.
Oh, I'll be more than happy to practice German as long as it includes German cuisine.
Does anybody here play chess?
I play, but I'm not very good at it.
Yeah, I'm bad.
Anybody following?
I'm trying to figure out what's going on with the chess scandal. I can't figure it. Does it really include AI and butt plugs?
I was going to say, I heard something that's pretty erotic.
They can't figure out. So here's the thing. I think we've mentioned this before, but now it's in the esteemed Wall Street Journal, so it must be true. There's a guy, a young kid, he's 19, named Hans Niemann. He's actually from the San Francisco Bay Area via, I think, Holland. But he's grown up in the U.S. Wall Street Journal is now reporting on a study by chess.com. Actually, let me find the journal article here because this is not from the journal. On a story from chess.com. Chess.com is the number one online gaming site for chess players. I'm a member. It's a paid site. There's a free one that's probably just as good called Lichess, but L-I-C-H-E-S-S. But chess.com is one of the biggest. There is a little bit of a conflict of interest here because they are about to acquire the world champion Magnus Carlsen's site, chess24.com, or merge with it. So they're in a financial relationship with Magnus Carlsen. This began when Magnus Carlsen was playing young Hans in a St. Louis chess tournament called the Sinkfield Cup. Very, very big time top grandmaster tournament. It was kind of an amazing thing for Hans Niemann, who has risen through the ranks and become grandmaster in an amazingly rapid way. Niemann, who had black pieces, surprisingly defeated the world champion, who is not only much more highly rated, but of course the world champion, at which point Magnus Carlsen, the world champion, withdrew from the tournament, with the saying nothing, but with the implication that Niemann had cheated. Then he played him another game later in which he resigned after one move, again, a symbolic resignation to say, I'm not going to play this guy because this guy cheats. He finally did admit that that's what the problem was. Chess.com did a big investigation. The way they investigate now is high. Here's the thing. None of this cheating has occurred in the past, but it was on the level of the, I think it was one of the Karpov World Championship matches where his opponent said, he's staring at me. It was on that level. He gets up every move and it's making me nervous. Bobby Fischer famously said, these cameras, they're whirring, and the Russians have put things in the lights to distract me. It was at that level. But now that computers can play better than any human alive, literally, you can put a computer on your Pixel 6 that will beat the best, will beat Magnus Carlsen 10 out of 10 times. You know, the best players. Those computers now can be used effectively to cheat even at the highest levels. The problem is how you get the moves from the computer. At the highest levels, Magnus Carlsen, Hans Niemann, even a little help at a couple of critical junctures could make a huge difference. That's how tight these games are, how very, very good they are, these players are. So you wouldn't have to like be going to the bathroom every five moves to look at your phone. You could be just getting a signal from somebody every one or two, like pointing at move the knight, and that might be enough to shift the whole game, right? So there's
been that Mo or Curly.
So chess.com a couple of weeks ago fired Niemann. They said, you can't play here anymore. Niemann had admitted when he was young, 12 and 16, this is the other side of this. He's a Twitch streamer. So he's very well known and has a lot of fans in that community. He admitted when he was 12 and 16, he says, young, I didn't know, 16, he's three years older now. He said, yeah, I cheated on some online games. I've never cheated over the board, like in person. Chess.com had banned him in the past. They now have fully banned him from that site. And everybody said, well, why? And for a while, chess.com said, we're not going to release this study. They finally did, and the Wall Street Journal has seen it. I guess they didn't release it publicly, but the Journal has seen the internal report in which chess.com found that Niemann had likely cheated more than 100 games. By the way, all of these online, they have no allegation.
So far, it's all online.
It's right? All online. But there have been, you know, there's a lot of statistics, and there's back and forth. If you follow the chess subreddit on Reddit, you'll see, you know, there are fans of both, that all the grandmasters are now starting to weigh in. It's my opinion that it's pretty clear that Niemann was up to something. But the question was, how did he cheat in the Sinkfield Cup? How did he beat the best player in the world? And then, by the way, the other kind of smoking gun is after the game, he's doing an interview and he doesn't seem to understand the game at all. It's like, he's talking about it. He's now analyzing the moves, wow. And he's wrong. It's like, no, well, that wouldn't, that's what? So that's a little bit of a smoking gun. Like,
yeah,
he didn't even know what he was doing. But they, and I talked about this before, they did a couple of things to the live stream. They live stream these live. And so you could have a Confederate at home watching the live stream somehow getting information to you. maybe a Confederate sitting. There's a live audience in as well, sitting in the live audience, going tugging.
Are you going to get? Are you going to get to the to the speculation?
I'm getting there.
How?
I'm getting there.
Okay,
I'm almost there right now.
Okay.
Right. I'm so close. So the Singfield Cup folks delayed the live feed by 15 minutes. They also took a long time to scan him for electronics. Now, notice Neiman has bushy hair. So it's possible he's concealing something up there. But then some were saying, well, you know, in fact, there is a well-known chess cheating incident with a guy having something in his shoe that would vibrate in a code. Because you can't.
Like Maxwell Smart.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, you could, and it has happened that people would go to the bathroom and look at their phone, but they're pretty. They don't let you have your at this level. They don't let you have your phone, and they keep an eye on you and so forth. So they scanned him with electronic scanners and stuff. They took a long time, like 15 minutes. Found nothing. He did not win the tournament. By the way, he took the lead by beating Carlsen, but immediately declined after that. And this is the other kind of smoking gun. Is that's the pattern of his career. He plays exceptionally well sometimes, and somewhat poorly. He's not a bad player. He's a very, very good player. Without the aid of a computer, even, but is he that good? Is he so good? Is he a world-class player? Is he a top player? And it's my opinion now that he's cheating somehow. We can't figure how. So this is where the butt plug comes in. They can't figure out exactly.
Not just butt plug, but AI and butt plug. We have reached the apotheosis of all technology, moral panic, and stories.
There needs to be a way to signal him
for a story.
And again, you don't have to signal him on every. I don't know if that's exactly moral panic, but think of the children. No, that's wrong. You don't have to. Again, you don't have to cheat every move. You don't have to get the move from the computer every time. Just maybe a couple of times a game, just at a critical juncture, you need to know. And Neiman. Carlsen, knowing he was going to play Neiman, played a line he'd never had played before. So one of the things grandmasters do before a tournament is they prepare for their opponent, looking literally every game they've ever played to understand what openings they use. Carlsen played an opening he'd never played before. Neiman was prepared not only for that opening, but found a novelty, which is very rare. He says, oh, yes, it was weird. I was studying that this morning. Like, that's his excuse. Pretty clear he got a signal. But how? We couldn't find anything in his hair. We couldn't find anything in his shoes. Where, oh, where? I don't think, honestly, that a vibrating butt plug, you know, it'd be hard to hide your reaction to that.
Right.
So I'm of the opinion he had a Confederate. In fact, once they stopped the live stream and delayed it by 15 minutes, he didn't play as well. In fact, he tends to play much better whenever there's a live stream. My opinion, he had a Confederate who was somehow signaling him.
But again, we don't know the somehow.
And this is in Neiman's defense. No one's found the proof of this at all, ever.
He has a chip in his
head. A smoking plug?
Smoking
plug. Oh!
Ow! And Stacey, I thought you were recusing yourself.
It's done.
Oh!
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm leading with that so we can defer talking about Elon
Musk. And we got a show title already.
We have so many exciting things. Google launched a bunch of devices. They updated their Google Home thing. There's Matter. There's so much to talk about.
And there's Elon.
And then we'll get to Elon a little bit, but the Matter is now. Matter is now official. I think it was you who debunked the notion that Matter was going to matter, Stacey.
Well, so I explained, and if you scroll all the way down, we have a list of stories. Just to explain, but like Matter is not going to be as exciting as everybody wants it to be.
It's a lower layer, you're saying. Yeah.
Five ways Matter will disappoint users at launch.
That's nice.
So that's the, like, you could, but it does matter. And it matters because it is going to be a low layer of interoperability. And anytime you have a layer of interoperability, that's good. Now, would I like it to be a little bit higher? By now, yes. When they launched it back in 2019, what they were offering was pretty awesome. But, you know,
I have to apologize because we kind of launched into this without any prologue.
Oh,
Matter is a joint venture of Microsoft, Google, Apple.
No.
Who's
Microsoft
in
is not involved.
Microsoft's not
so,
involved.
Matter.
Google, Apple, Zigbee, Z-Wave.
No. Here we go. Let's try again. It's Google, Apple, Amazon, Samsung. Those are the big four. And then there's like 540 other companies, like on the chip side, on the other, like Signify, Nordic Semiconductors, Silicon Labs, Infineon, all these companies. Microsoft is actually not a member.
Is Zigbee or Z-Wave a member?
So the Zigbee Alliance, Matter was created originally as Project Connected Home over IP, Project Chip. It was part of the Zigbee Alliance. Like
Zigbee is one of the two best known protocols
Zigbee is a wireless protocol for the smart home. Z-Wave is another.
This is all about a smart home, home automation.
Yes, this is an interoperability protocol for the smart home. Right. So the Zigbee Alliance was like, well, crap, we're going to call this whole thing Matter, and Zigbee isn't really part of Matter because it's not. So we should change our name. So they now call themselves the Connectivity Standards Alliance. They still have Zigbee under their umbrella, but Zigbee and Z-Wave, they won't go utterly away for a long time, but they are definitely on the back end.
Does this replace Zigbee and Z-Wave?
Yes, sort of. Okay. So instead of using something like Zigbee or Z-Wave, which are both like low power, low data rate mesh networks in the home, you're going to use Thread. And Thread was actually created back in 2014 by Google, Samsung, a couple other companies. And so Thread is now your low data rate mesh protocol for the smart home. And then Wi-Fi is going to be everything else, anything with battery, et cetera. So you'll have those. And then Bluetooth is going to be how you provision your devices.
So you'll use something like Bluetooth LE to communicate initially with a brand new device, get it set up, get it welcomed into the Thread and Wi-Fi networks, and from then on you could communicate with it.
Right. And then you're going to do that via QR code. Matter's going to make that super easy. Instead of having like soft APs, I don't know if y'all remember, like sometimes you used to have like, you would have a device and it would create its own Wi-Fi network, and then your phone would be like, okay. They're like, turn off your Wi-Fi on your phone and then connect to this extra special Wi-Fi network.
So horrible. Yeah.
It was awful. That's all going to be gone.
By the way, we still do it 99.9% of the time, and this isn't taken over yet.
It isn't. So any Matter device, though, you're going to get the Matter device. And if you've ever used HomeKit or some of the newer devices where they're just like, hey, open the app, scan the QR code, and it's like, boop, is this your Wi-Fi network? Enter your password. You're like, boop, 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 boop. And then it's like, I found it. That's how
many manufacturers have attempted to get around this ridiculous setup. Amazon stores your Wi-Fi and passwords in your account. And then when you get a new Amazon device, it says, it's okay if I happen to know a friend who knows a friend who knows how to log in. And you say, oh, okay. And it just gets on. Apple uses subsonic sound to communicate from its Apple TV to the Apple devices. So there, people understand the setup process is awful. And I guess the hope is maybe we can make this a standard process across all devices.
The setup process is going to be easy. If you buy a Matter device, getting it on your network is actually going to work. It's going to be good. So that's awesome. The other thing that's going to be awesome is if you have a Matter device, you're going to be like, oh, it doesn't matter if I live in a Matter A or an Amazon Echo home system or a HomeKit home system. It doesn't matter. It's all going to work.
Okay.
So those are all going to be great.
Is this backward compatible, Stacey, or is this only new devices?
It depends. So Thread uses, I know, nothing can be easy.
A lot of the Google stuff we have already has Thread in it, right?
Yes. So things that have Zigbee radios and enough hardware and the manufacturer willing to update it can go into, can be like retroactively.
So Thread uses the same frequency as Zigbee did?
It uses the same IEEE protocol. Oh, so the underlying wireless, it's 802.4.
Oh, it's a standard.
15.4. Okay. 802.15.4.
Okay.
Which is the same underlying standard of Zigbee. Okay. So basically it's the same radio. You just layer Zigbee or Matter software on top of it.
So,
or Thread. In the
OSI networking model, the seven layer cake that is networking, you have
Thread would be layer three. Matter is layer five because it's at the application layer.
Oh, that's important. So Thread is a standard, just like Zigbee. It's the IEEE standard. That's at the low level layer three, and on two layers up is an application protocol. And that's what matter is an application protocol. It's pretty high up in the stack.
It's super high up in the stack. And what it is it's basically it's a data framework. So all that matter is going to do, this is how you should conceptualize it. For the devices it supports, this version supports most devices, but it doesn't support things like small appliances. It doesn't support video. So your video doorbell or cameras are not part of this. But for the devices it supports, it's going to do things like, hi, I'm a plug. I am on or I am off. Hi, I'm a light bulb. I'm on, I'm off, I'm this color, I'm dimmed to this level, whatever. And all of that will be standard across no matter, any matter device can read and understand and talk to each other that way, right?
You have a standard messaging protocol and a way of saying, these are the things I understand, and this is how you tell me to do something. This is what object-oriented programming is trying to solve by saying you build these black boxes, and then you have established interface on how to query them and set them and so forth.
Yeah. And if you're like any normal human being, you're like, oh my God, Stacey, I don't care about Wi-Fi and thread protocols and stacks.
Oh, but you do care because nothing works.
Right. Well, here's what you should know as a consumer. Today, this week, the CSA said, hey, Matter version 1 is now official and it's out. They also said that there are about 4,000 devices from our existing members that are actually already ready and certified because they've been doing all that work this summer. Other people can now start the certification process. So we are going to see Matter devices instantly, pretty much.
So that's what the news is that this protocol is now in version 1.0. It's official.
Yes.
That's the
version 1.0. That is our news.
Right.
And you're going to see things like Google this week also announced a bunch of devices, and some of those devices, like in Amazon last week and its devices, they announced things that were Matter certified. You should also pay attention because not only from kind of the digital assistants and your routers and those kind of things, you'll be looking for, like, is it Matter certified? That means it can talk to all these devices. You should also look for in your routers and digital assistants, is it a Thread border router? And what that will do is that is going to let your Thread devices, and that's that low power sensors, all of those things, talk to your Wi-Fi network. So that gets them back onto the Wi-Fi network and talking to all the other things that use Wi-Fi.
Does Matter do anything for security?
Yes, it does. I'm so glad you asked. It offers encryption. One of the really good things about Matter, I may be kind of poo-pooing like the advanced use cases, which it won't be good at right away, but it does. It's one of the first standards that offers basic security as part of it. So any Matter device is going to have encryption. It's going to require some sort of secure enclave, and it's going to require a certification process. So when you have a Matter device and you bring it onto your network, it checks back and it's like, hey, is this legit? And they'll have a certificate, and the certificate will go to the certificate authority, and so the certificate authority will say, yes, it is. And it'll come back and it'll be like, yes, it is. And you'll be like, sweet. So that kind of
security will be good. Is this an improvement then over? So in other words, should I look for Matter instead of, say, Apple HomeKit,
yes,
which we've recommended in the past?
Yes.
It's a kind of somewhat of a guarantee of obviously it doesn't do everything, but of a certain level of security and capability and interoperability.
Yeah, and they took a lot of, like, many of the things that Apple has been focused on. So things like local control, Apple's always been way ahead of the game on that when compared to like Google or Amazon, right? So they definitely push that. The QR code is actually how HomeKit devices get online. So they borrowed that from Apple. There's a lot inside Matter that comes from Apple, which I think a lot of people will really appreciate.
Scooter X is reminding me of this story earlier this week that Ratchio, which is the home automation sprinkler system, has stopped using HomeKit because HomeKit can't resolve this no response error that users are getting. So, you know, you might say, oh, well, Apple must really get this and be able to do it better than anyone. No, nobody's really solved this problem.
Yeah. And Apple's HomeKit, I mean, like depending on when, because HomeKit went through a bunch of iterations. I don't know, at the very beginning, y'all may not remember this, but you actually had to have like an MFI certification and use special hardware.
Right.
It was expensive.
It was very expensive.
Painful.
Yeah. They eliminated that hardware requirement a few years ago. That was a big step. Yeah.
But they kind of brought some of that back. So part of the hardware was security and having a secure enclave on the device. Yeah. And now you have that with these. So again,
What does Matter require for certification? It does not require a special chipset or anything like that.
Well, you have to have, Wi-Fi and or
you have
thread,
to have certain capabilities. You have to have a thread radio, yeah. Wi-Fi radio, Bluetooth, LE.
You have to have, and all the chip vendors are going to offer Matter certified chips.
Ah, so there will be a Qualcomm system on a chip that will give you the Matter stack.
Yeah, I don't know if Qualcomm's participating at this level, but Nordic, Infineon, NXP, Silicon Labs. I should mention that almost all of those companies have been sponsors of my show at some point in time. Some of them are current sponsors.
Here's a great question from our IRC. We probably should have asked right at the beginning. What is the problem Matter's trying to solve? What question is Matter the answer for?
It's going to Best Buy and staring there and saying, oh, man, I want a smart plug. And I have a Google Home.
Instead of plug. Let's imagine a smart switch. Okay?
How about a thermostat? Or
so Hans Zimmer walks into a Home Depot.
Yes. And they're a HomeKit user. Let's say they're a HomeKit user. And instead of looking for HomeKit stuff, now you can look for Matter stuff. And there's going to be more of it because remember, HomeKit was kind of a pain. And you'll no longer let's say you bought the right blinds, but now you're like, oh, I want a thermostat. And then you're like, oh, I want this thermostat. Then you're like, does this work with my ecosystem? I don't know. So that's what it was solving. So it's solving interoperability. It's also solving a reliability issue because Thread and having this high quality mesh network in the home hopefully is going to make things work a little bit better. And because a lot of these devices will have local control, if you have a device whose cloud connection dies, let's say you have a device that its maker goes away, for basic functionality, it will retain that because it is part of the Matter, because it's speaking that same data model and can still give those local commands, right? So that'll help there. And then security, having that level of security and certification. Those are the problems it solves. Okay.
Well, we'll watch with interest. And of course, Stacy really is our IoT expert. And as you can tell, it's going to take an IoT expert to automate your home.
That's the point. Like, you won't need an expert eventually. Like, I think
eventually
this year for the holidays.
Eventually is the key.
Important.
So I think this year for the holidays, you'll see Matter. Like, you could get your, in-laws or someone, you know, if you want to get them the smart lights that they can control with the voice system, you could get them the voice speaker and then you could get the light bulbs. And you'll know they'll just be easy to set up and work together.
So that's a huge step right there.
So this is solving stuff really soon. I thought you were saying that it's not going to handle a lot of things right out the gate. So
it'll
this is
solve
solving
that.
A lot like, of the common stuff right now.
It'll get you some devices up and running. If you're like me and you have like 80 devices and you're going to transfer a bunch of them over and you've got complex automations, no. I'm going to Matter all this month.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So, Stacy, I think that the confusion has been a big market limiter for a long time, since the beginning of IoT, right? So if you were going to predict market size, if you were going to draw a chart, is it hockey sticky? Is it just, a little happier? How much of a difference does this make to the market?
You know, Google in their thing on Monday, when I talked to them about
this,
their
is the very
launch,
first night.
Sorry, I don't know what that
it
was.
It was a $53 billion market.
I didn't do it.
Go ahead. So, I don't think it's hockey stickish. Well, maybe it is over the longer term. What tends to happen is people buy like a use case. So, I think we'll see a lot of people buying like connected lights or plugs that are now finally easy, right? And then they'll be like, oh, I can totally do this. And then they'll go out and buy more stuff. So also, I think like with the economic kind of current economic conditions, I think it's kind of hard to imagine people like, But I think you'll see people like, maybe this year they'll have 3 devices, and by the end of next year they're going to have like 8 devices. And that so how long I don't know before, if that's really hockey stick.
How long before you can be on the show and look back and say, I told you this was going to be so easy your grandmother could do it?
Well, I think that'll happen like in a couple of months.
Really?
I really do. Like, I think the use cases that your grandmother wants to do.
Yeah, yeah, okay, your point before. Yeah, yeah. If you just want to buy one thing for grandma. Okay.
Well, even if you want to, I mean, like.
If you want to win a tennis, I mean, a chess tournament, you know, so.
Hey, I didn't finish the chess thing, by the way. Can we go back to that?
We didn't.
There's one more thing I forgot to mention. The U.S. Championship started today. In fact, round one is going on right now. Neiman is playing. He's about to win his first game. $262,000 at stake. And there is a lot of speculation around this and a lot of attention on this tournament. So that Hans Neiman story is not over yet. And the U.S. Championship is going to be a very interesting couple
Can
of
we
weeks.
Hear 30 seconds of the commentary?
You want to hear how exciting it is? Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to hear how exciting this
let's
is.
Let's just turn my...
to me as well. The problem, of course, is...
This is Yasir Sarawan.
Which is so strong.
Long time
US
Grandmaster.
But I can't get rid of it by playing
champion.
Bishop takes. And if I take on
It's
F5,
like golf without grass.
Like this, I'm just not getting sufficient compensation anymore.
So perhaps a more practical approach is to take on F5 and then go knight to D4. And try to break with F5.
Okay. Fair.
Okay, Mr. Jarvis.
I got it. I got all I needed. Okay. I honestly,
this is very interesting because he is about to win his very first game. I mean, the best way for Hans Neiman to prove everybody wrong is to not cheat and win the U.S. Championship. And then everybody's just going to have to eat their words.
But how will they know whether he didn't cheat or not?
Well, right. I'm hoping it's the same place. Cavity search. Yeah. Well, you might not be joking, actually. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
you
certainly.
Just, you know what? You could run a Wi-Fi disruptor or something. You could just shut down the network.
Yeah, you got it. You got to have no live audience and no live stream. There are ways to absolutely prevent this. And, you know, I mean, it's very interesting. There are ways you can, after the game, and analyze it to determine whether he played like a human. Believe it or not, that's a whole story for another.
Can you? Well, can you? Let me ask a different question. Can you? You find you don't cheat, but you use AI to teach you new methods that no one kind of ever thought of before. Is that how you potentially find?
That's how all grandmasters now do it. You can.
Yeah, they do.
You can use a computer away from the board, and they all do that now. They use. In fact, it's really this man-machine centaur-like symbiosis. For all the best players, you know, you always have, if you're a super grandmaster, you have a entourage of 2 or 3 other lesser grandmasters who work with you to train, to develop new lines, to analyze your opponent.
Patch you on the back and bring you a towel.
Stuff like that. And now computers are very much part of that. And often on your team, you'll have somebody who is a computer chess expert who is also working with you on this. So, yeah, computers have become a big part of it, but in a positive way. I mean, you know, if you can channel the computer, you're going to always win. But what's the point? That's not fun. And it's one of the few human endeavors where a computer actually is 100% better than humans. Just, you know, it's done. It's over. Same, I guess, Go is the same checkers. A lot of games. Anyway, I'll be watching this with interest. So you can continue.
How do you know he's winning?
Matter. The computer says he's got a 96.4% chance to win.
You're cheating. I see. I thought you knew by looking.
Actually, I haven't really looked at it that hard. He's got a very strong... Neiman is black. He's got a very strong attack against white. Doesn't look like he has a material advantage. Well, I guess he does. He's up what they call the exchange. He's like a pawn up. But, the computer says he has very little chance of losing and almost 100% chance of winning. There's his move. That's what it looks like. It's so exciting when they make a move.
Mr. Jarvis?
Yeah.
Really? All right,
I got one more question.
Yeah.
So in terms of the butt plug, do players potentially move more than one part, or he keeps his hand on it until he decides.
Yeah, so it's what they call touch piece. So as soon as you touch a piece, you're required to move it. You can sit and stare.
Can you move back? Can you?
No. Hell no. What are you, 12?
So why does he hold his hand on it for a second?
Oh, yeah, he can move back, but he now has to move that piece. Yes, he can. It's, you know what? It's kind of the way sometimes they do that. And if you were cheating, you might do that as well to make it.
That's what I'm saying.
You were really thinking.
Here's a choice. No, no, the other way. Right.
Yeah, that was some of the other thing, the accusations were. He seems so, Carlson said, he didn't seem like he was paying attention. Usually if somebody's beating me, they're working really hard to beat me. And he didn't seem like he was, you know, doing anything. He was just kind of sitting there. He's got a pretty strong game right now. He's kind of moving in on this one. So it's exciting.
Well, I don't like that statement of they look like they're working hard to beat me because.
Well, just as a fact.
That's just like saying everybody mourns the same way.
You know? No, it's not like that because if your son's running in a track meet and the other guy's not sweating. He's not
He's
working.
A robot.
I mean, there is no way to cheat in a track meet. Well, I guess there are, but.
Yeah, there are ways to cheat, like doping. PEDs and so forth.
Right.
But some athletes, you know, they're just ice water cold.
Yeah, no, this we're not talking that. I mean, it's estimated these guys in a three or four hour match, that's how long they play, usually as long as 6 hours, burn, you know, like 3,000 calories. It's and without moving. There's a lot of brain activity.
Mentally taxing.
Very mentally taxing. And this attack, which is going to come down the H file, is going to be devastating for White's King. And that's all I can say about that.
To your credit, sir, this is not the Sudoku you made us watch.
Is this better than Sudoku?
Thank goodness. This is so much better than that.
All of this has simply been an attempt to avoid the elephant in the room. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, yes, it looks like Elon is buying Twitter. What the hell?
You notice I'm in mourning. I'm wearing black again today.
I'm wearing black.
You wear black every week. Yeah.
There's a lot to say about
Alpha
this.
Team.
I'm just glad I got a good night's sleep last night. And you know why I did? Thanks to my 8 Sleep pod cover. Our sponsor, 8 Sleep. Actually, I've been sleeping since before they were a sponsor. I've been sleeping on an 8 Sleep bed. 8 Sleep brings you what you need, which is a good night's sleep. The Pod, I have the Pod 2 Pro cover. The Pod 3 just came out. It's the ultimate sleep machine. You know this, right? Consistent good sleep can help reduce the likelihood of serious health issues. It can reduce the risk of heart disease, lower your blood pressure. There's even some evidence that it reduces the risk of Alzheimer's. And yet, 30% of us, more almost a third, struggle with sleep. You know what the number one reason people say they have a poor night's sleep? They're too hot at night. Well, with the 8 Sleep, you'll never be too hot or too cold. 8 Sleep's Pod Pro cover, the one I have, can cool your bed down as cool as 55 degrees Fahrenheit, heat it up to 110 degrees Fahrenheit, and it does it using AI watching your sleep patterns to help you get more deep sleep. It's the only sleep technology that dynamically cools and heats each side of the bed to maintain the optimal sleeping temperature for what your body needs. And you know how I know this? Because Lisa's side is completely different than mine. You start by setting it on your app, the 8 Sleep app. I set it to be warm when I get in. I like to get in a cozy, warm bed and then cool off as the night goes. And actually, that cooling brings you into deeper and deeper sleep. This is a biological fact. And then in the morning, you can say, I want to wake up at 8 a.m. or whatever, 7 a.m. And I want it to warm up slightly to wake me up. You can even have it vibrate if you want. You can actually have a little bit of a silent alarm. And I just wake up feeling great. Clinical data shows 8 Sleep users experience a 19% increase in recovery, up to 32% improvement in sleep quality, up to 34% more deep sleep. The deep sleep is the key. That's the sleep that's actually doing the garbage collection, cleaning up your brain. With more deep sleep, you'll be confident your mind and body are moving through those restorative sleep stages. It's so vital for physical recovery, hormone regulation, mental clarity. The Pod Pro cover actually watches the temperature of the bedroom too. So when we were having that heat wave, it was really hot. I said, it was great. It was like air conditioning in my bed. It was so cool and refreshing. In the dead of winter, it just nice and cozy and warm. It it does it exactly the way you want. I can't wait. We're gonna. I hope we will order this new Pod 3 cover. You certainly should. It enables more accurate sleep and health tracking because it has double the amount of sensors, so it's even better. I don't know. I mean, the Pod is not magic. I get it, but it sure feels like it. It makes such a difference in how you sleep. Go to 8sleep, E-I-G-H-T, spell it out, 8sleep.com/twig. You will sleep cozy this fall. You'll also save $150 at checkout on the Pod. 8sleep. They currently ship in the U.S., Canada, the U.K., select countries in the EU and Australia. 8sleep.com/twig. We love R8Sleep, 8sleep.com/twig. Thank you, 8sleep, for an amazing night's sleep. I feel very, very good. Wow, what a melodrama is going on in Twitter land. I hardly don't know where to begin. So, yesterday, news came that Elon Musk had sent a letter to Twitter, to the Twitter board, and they said to the judge, saying, okay, fine, I'll buy it. $54.20 a share, $44 billion. People seem to act like, okay, that's it, it's a done deal, but it is pending the ending of the court trial, which was supposed to begin in a little couple of weeks, October 17th. The judge today said, I haven't heard anything yet, so we're going to move ahead. There's some speculation that the reason Elon cried uncle is he's being deposed tomorrow. So he would be called to testify under oath tomorrow in a deposition. The other possible sword hanging over his head is the release of additional messages between Musk and others. There was a tranche of messages released last week that were, I think, not so embarrassing for Elon, but pretty embarrassing for the sycophants like Jason Calacanis.
It was perfect. I can't wait to get to that. It was just perfect.
Poor Jason. Guy. I love Jason.
He's been on our shows many times. Poor guy. No. It was the essence of Jason.
It was a little bit of a suck up.
It was this week in Jason. Yeah. No.
A little bit of a suck. So first he volunteers. Now you remember one of the things, after Elon made the bid, he scrambled to raise the money. He borrowed quite a bit against his Tesla stock, but even though he's the richest man in the world, was not enough to cover the $44 billion. Larry Ellison.
He's not the richest man in the world.
He sure was. Is he no longer?
Isn't the Tata guy?
Oh, I think the Tata guy might have come on. I don't know. You know, Tesla's stock has plummeted. But at the time, he was the richest man.
At the time,
in the world.
He was the richest
man.
But that actually points out how little it means. It's not like, Scrooge McDuck that he's got a swimming pool full of dollar bills. It's all tied up in Tesla stock, and it's all because of this value of Tesla stock. And incidentally, can I just say Elon did an amazing thing. SpaceX did an amazing thing this morning. You watched that, John. I know I did. 9 a.m. The Falcon Dragon Crew 5-6 went up, with four astronauts, one from Russia, one from Japan, two from the U.S., including a Petaluman. The commander was a Native American, born here in Petaluma, went to Rancho Cotati High down the road.
And, ooh, go Cougars.
Yeah. Isn't that where is that where your kids went? It's Rancho
Cotati? That's where hard hits go.
Yeah. She was the commander, first Native American in space.
Awesome.
Yeah, really. It was a beautiful launch, flawless. The booster landed
on
the drone platform. Well, I got to point out, SpaceX's success is not necessarily due to Elon. It might be despite Elon. There are a number of SpaceX employees who say,
I've said before,
he's just a distraction.
The success of something like SpaceX could be because Elon put the right people in place to make this stuff happen.
Yeah,
you've been saying that regularly, Ant. Yes.
In any event, well done. So that I mention is I just don't want to say Elon is just the most horrible person in the world.
I will.
I don't think he's horrible. I think he's like a lot of billionaires.
His Ukraine trick last week was horrendous.
It was horrendous. He said, they should just have a vote, and Russia, should get, whatever it gets. And by the way, you know, when the foreign minister of the Ukraine called him a bad word.
Zelensky tweeted back at him. I mean, this is.
And
this
by the way, today, the Russians said, hey, good idea.
Yeah, right.
That's a great idea, Elon.
And I wonder, is there perchance between that and he got kind of, I'm sorry, he's nominated for a reward. I'm just asking. Could they, we know there's Saudi money in this deal. Could there be Russian money?
Actually, I think the biggest third party in this is the Saudi sovereign fund.
Yes, yes.
As we know from the revealed text messages, Larry Ellison DMs him and says, I'm in. What do you want? $1.2 billion? You tell me.
No, he said $1 billion. And Elon then said no too.
and Larry went along with it.
Yeah.
Jason Calacanis says, hey, I'd like to be the CEO if you don't mind. I have some great ideas. And he fires off message after message about how Twitter should be run. And at the same time, and I got the email, sends out emails to people saying, hey, I'm building a group of people who will help Elon in this acquisition. We give him some money. Would you be interested? Elon... eventually is compelled to say, can you knock it off? This is proving embarrassing to me. I didn't see anything really embarrassing from Elon. It was mostly the sycophants kissing up to him. Jason eventually says, I'm carrying your sword, sir.
It was just awful. Just awful. the ultimate Jason. Jason doesn't know how to be embarrassed.
No,
it won't bother him.
No, I love Jason. And, you know, he's always said that he was good friends with Elon. When I bought the Model X, he said, I'll get you at the head of the line. He didn't. But, you know, he knows Elon. You know, he had a model, he had a Roadster. He knows Elon. Twitter, meanwhile, has really been rocked by this whole thing. 700 employees have left. Two major executives were fired. The board.
Major talent has left.
Major talent. The board. Yes. Is now very active in pursuing Elon, making him do it, including there's a big article about Brett Taylor, our guy, Brett. We love Brett, who's the chairman of the board, who is on the committee that is pursuing this litigation. The other shoe that might drop is additional messages, except it looks like Elon moved the important ones to Signal.
But said he wasn't using Signal for the deal, but they have... one smoking gun, not plug, showing that he was moving a conversation to Signal. So yeah. They've got him there,
the
too.
The conversation they really want to know about is, did he talk with the Twitter whistleblower, Peter Zatko, before he whistleblew? In other words, did he maybe encourage him to do this? Apparently, someone with an anonymous Proton Mail account, that's an encrypted email account, on the same on May 6th, sent an email. He said, "I am a former exec at Twitter, leading teams directly involving trust and safety content moderation." In the email, the sender, is it Zatko? We don't know. Suggests that Musk's team get in touch on another platform through quote alternate secure means, in order for this person to provide information about Twitter. It's not probative, but I think it's Mudge. It's Peter Zatko. And that he did, in fact, approach Elon saying, I got something you might want to know. This could also be a reason Elon might have said, you know, this is the guesses are that Elon knew he was going to lose. I don't know if that's the case.
Can I ask a question here? So lose would be defined as you must buy the company.
Yeah.
Is there also a definition of lose that says, you were such a bad boy, Elon, you not only buy the company, you fork up another $5 billion to injured parties?
Is
there further punishment? No.
So I don't think so.
Lose is just buy it.
I think lose is buy it, but along
the way,
2 weeks
in Philadelphia,
a lot of damage in discovery. And this happens again and again. This happened in Epic versus Apple, where the discovery of all of this stuff pre-trial is embarrassing as hell to these companies. Apple suffered a lot of reputational damage. They won the case against Epic, but they lost a lot of reputation because of the messages. You know, we'll be quoting those messages for years to come. It just happens again and again and again. And I think already it's been a somewhat of an embarrassment. But if messages between Zatko and Musk before the whistleblowing showed up, that'd be bad. Anyway, for whatever reason, and it's, you know, it's all 12G chess, maybe. Could be checkers. But for whatever reason, Elon said, no, let's buy it. Now, his lawyers have still not apparently told the judge, at least the judge hadn't received that information. So she said, we're going to act as if the trial's still on for the 17th. So I'm not sure what's going on. The judge, right before the Musk letter, did say Twitter could hunt for secret chats with Zatko.
Do you think we'll ever see the regulators come in? What is it? The SEC?
SEC?
Yeah. Do you think we'll ever see any of them come in and say, look here, dude, you need to pay for these problems that you've created?
Musk, I think, is trying to... did he not go to appeal to the Supreme Court? I feel like he did over this issue of whether the SEC should be allowed to muzzle him. I think the Supreme Court rejected that, by the way. The SEC is, you know, I think really should definitely get involved. I don't know what the current status of their investigations are.
Do you see any scenario now with him?
Sorry?
Is there any scenario in which he doesn't get the company?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, who in the hell knows? Well, for one thing, one of the conditions of this letter was that the case be dropped.
But why would you drop it until such time as you...
Twitter should... I don't know who has... I guess Twitter has to contact the judge. The judge says, I haven't heard anything.
Well, Twitter's statement was, as Mike Masnick said, who I was with yesterday, when all this happened, this was probably the most lawyered message in a year, in which Twitter just said, we intend to close.
Period. Yeah.
Period.
Period.
Love it.
So the judge needs to get word that Twitter's dropping its lawsuit. But isn't Elon also suing? So both...
That's right. There's a countersuit.
Both parties have to tell the judge that they're going to drop the case. Apparently that has not happened.
Well, Twitter would be a fool to do that until they know that the financing...
Well, that's
closed.
The condition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's that. Then it's a bit chicken and eggy, ain't it? Because I'm not going to... you first. No, you first. You drop the suit. No, you close the deal. Well, no, I'm not closing the deal until you drop the suit. No, you drop the suit. I mean, is that where you are? It's a simple nya game?
Masnick says he thinks Elon will own Twitter. Let's go forward assuming he will, and then it'll happen quickly. Okay, now I know what your answer to that question is. I was going to say, what do you think?
I like Mr. Elgin's commentary.
Yeah, let's go to that, because that was a great piece. So it won't happen overnight. It'll take a month or two to close. It's kind of unknown whether there might be regulatory approval and so forth. I don't know. It's just a purchase of a company. Elon's not in the social network business, so... I guess there probably wouldn't be regulatory holdups, right? Anyway...
It's a kind of a rocket ship, Twitter.
It'd be a... It'd be soon. It'd be within a month or two. So what happens?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure someone right now... Oh, go on.
No. I want to hear from you.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I'm sure someone right now is trying to build something that could take a mass exodus from Twitter.
Yes.
I mean, I think happens is...
we're going to show that in a minute.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. I was part of that conversation just yesterday.
I think that's not the only one, but you're right. I'm sure that's one thing is... I mean, of course, the minute Elon closes on Twitter... I'm not going to leave Twitter. Would you leave Twitter, Stacey, just because Elon closed on it?
Not right away, but I mean, I think the way Elon ends up managing Twitter might make it a less hospitable place for someone like myself.
Yes, might. but might not. I just don't know.
And so I'm like, yeah, when that happens, I will.
Exactly. That's my attitude. That's mine too. See what happens. Yours too.
He would have to give me.
Andre Brock Jr. Sorry, Ant. Go ahead.
No, I was saying he would have to give me a reason to leave. I know a lot of folks on Twitter right now are just throwing their hands up. It's like, oh, this, we can't let this happen, blah, 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 blah. But what if he actually comes in and does a decent job of putting people in place and helping to curtail the crap fest that's happening inside of Twitter?
I don't think that's going to happen. Elon has a lot of ideas.
He hasn't demonstrated much command of the space, you know, like he really understands.
The best case is that it's no worse than it is today. That is by far the best case.
Well, Chris Anderson.
Everything else is done.
Oh, the guy.
Do it in a snotty accent, will you?
The guy who founded TED Talks. Chris.
No, he didn't found them. He did not fund it.
Because I know who founded it.
Yes.
Saul Werman, right?
Werman. Yep.
Way back when. Technology, entertainment, design. But he currently runs TED, right? Chris Anderson.
Yeah.
So he tweeted, amidst all the sneering, how does he talk?
Very, very Oxbridge.
I'd like to offer a prediction for how the Elon Musk acquisition of Twitter will play out. First of all, I think the deal will indeed go through now.
No, I regret it.
Backed by an impressive roster of co-investors. Next, the company will undoubtedly
By the way, Saudi Arabia, but keep going.
Well, but, you know, if you're going to paint with that brush, a lot of Silicon Valley is
papered
with Saudi money. I mean,
I know.
The Sovereigns Fund is very powerful in Silicon Valley, which we should probably at some point talk about. Whatever. Impressive roster of co-investors is unnecessarily ass-kissy, but okay, we'll say it. but that's kind of the whole point of this piece, I think. The company will undoubtedly experience a period of significant turmoil. Because, like, everybody's going to quit. There's a lot of change ahead. Many won't like it. But, and here's the but you're looking for, Stacey, it will gradually become clear that a lot of the changes are actually quite exciting. First of all, fears of all the content moderation being abandoned will prove unfounded. Instead, the algorithm will be adjusted to avoid giving so much amplification to political divisiveness. Actually, that sounds good to me.
Yeah.
And he can't get rid of content moderation, whatever he says, because that would turn the place into a cesspool. But, you know, he said he'd invite Donald Trump back. That's...
Well, right there.
Whether the Donald will go back, I don't know. But, you know, if you're going to downplay political divisiveness and fighting the head of the political divisive party, it's not the best way to do it. The debate that matters is not about who is on or off the platform, Anderson says, but what type of tweets get amplified. You know, some of that's in Twitter's control, but some of it's not. It's retweeting.
Well, it's not.
It's press coverage.
A lot of it's not. Yeah.
If that can change, everything changes. Next, steps will be put into place to verify all human Twitter accounts. Blue checks for all. That process will lay the basis for those accounts to be used for, get ready for this, transactions a la WeChat using a Twitter crypto coin.
This is his dream that he's going to be WeChat and he's going to do what China does from the base of Twitter. And how much do you have to invest to do that?
Elon says he's going to use Twitter to build an everything app called X. Buying Twitter is an accelerant, using that space language, to creating X, the everything app. We'll talk about Mike Elgin's explanation of what that X is in just a second, but let's finish Chris Anderson's lengthy tweet. For example, it could be a Twitter crypto coin or U.S. dollars. For example,
How old-fashioned U.S. dollars.
Yeah, how old-fashioned.
Oh, my God.
Well, actually, this makes more sense, this next paragraph. People may be offered paid subscriptions and receive usable tokens. So you pay them $5 and they give you 500 Twitter dollars. This could bring the company significant revenue.
I second that sigh, Stacey.
Plus, I don't need monopoly money on my social networks.
Yeah.
No.
But it is all the rage, isn't it?
This is such
Although a NFT sales have plummeted since the beginning of the year. They've just fallen off the map, which is tough for people who are holding those valuable moonbirds.
Monkeys.
Bored apes.
That's what it is.
So this paid subscriptions for usable tokens could bring the company significant revenue. Plus, get this, create its own economy on which goods and services could be transacted. The sheer scale of Twitter can rapidly bring this to critical mass. But get ready.
That facial expression, Stacey.
We're not done. There's more.
You speak for me.
But then, wait. September 2023. Growing numbers of people will be attracted to Twitter X. It will be far less prone to robo-spam and algorithm-fueled outrage. Magic.
Well, how? Yeah, magic. Exactly.
It's going to be no more spam.
Because Web 3.
Because magic.
Because the chain.
Instead, it will offer a lot of new functionality. That could be true. Elon could do that.
Do you know how long?
This is the pain, the final bit. How do you pronounce that? Pay to Elon.
Pay on.
There is plenty Elon Musk can be legitimately criticized for. His own use of Twitter can seem ill-advised. He can give the impression of being more political than he is. And there's no question.
What does that mean?
Apparently he's not political. We didn't know. And there's no question.
He's just a jerk and gets upset when people call him political.
Yeah.
I mean, it's people who are like, I'm not political. They just don't recognize.
Oh, I'm not political. I'm just right. And there's no question there will be many bumps along the way, says Anderson. But this is the key point. As a tech entrepreneur, he is without peer. In 2013, I predicted he would become the world's richest man within a decade.
Check. Oh, ho, ho.
Check. Check. The next day, that's his check, not mine. The next decade will be even more spectacular. Fixing Twitter may be as hard a job as converting Teslas into robo-taxis. Still hasn't happened. And proving the viability of a monster rocket capable of taking humanity to the Mars. Still hasn't happened. But within 3 years from today, I predict he will have accomplished all three. Hey, there you go. Put that down. Would you put that in the book there, Ant?
Got it.
Tesla robo-taxis, rockets to Mars, and he fixed Twitter.
And let's not forget tubes under America.
Yeah. Not investment advice, just one person's opinion. Now pass me the popcorn. Your thoughts, Ms. Higginbotham.
The turning Twitter into an everything app. I think that's a really great idea. The challenge is it is difficult in a way that Elon can't engineer around. And, you know, I don't know if Elon's coming up with these ideas or he's inspiring his engineering staff to really work hard at some things. There's some really cool things that I will give Elon or the companies that Elon is heading a lot of credit for. I mean, yes, we can mock the lack of robo-taxis. But, you know, when you sat up for his engineering thing for the Optimus robot in the way he's approaching AI training, that actually there's some really interesting science and some really big bets on their computing platform that I'm like, hey, that's actually legit and pretty cool.
But the robot was BS, right, Stacey?
The robot itself, I don't think there'll be a full functioning robot like he anticipates in 6 months or 9 months. I can't remember. It was very late. I was on a plane. But back to X in this concept of Twitter as the everything app. The problem is payments, and Apple spent almost 8 years working on getting payments, and they're just now hitting their stride with Apple Pay and that sort of thing. And I think, and Elon knows this, he was at PayPal. I think getting an everything app and having the payments as part of the app, because you would have to have some sort of agreement with credit card companies. I don't think anyone can reinvent that space. We've seen so many people try. And
Ms. Stacey, with him having history at PayPal, do you not think he has a bit of a head start in being able to see what Apple went through? Do you not think that's some head start knowledge for him to try to put stuff in place?
I feel like he knows how hard it is. I also feel like Apple went about it from a different angle than the PayPal folks did, right? So I feel like even if he's able to do that, he's not going to be able to do that for years. And there's not really a good way to do it quickly. And it's not an engineering issue. It is a business issue. And
yeah, you've
got to
replace the entire credit card infrastructure of the country. You've got to convince every merchant to come on and accept payment this way. You've got to add all kinds of functionality and change consumer habits about how they do everything. China can do it because they have a monopoly government over monopoly businesses. That ain't the case here. That's not happening. Not happening.
Yeah, and China also didn't have the credit card infrastructure and the payment infrastructure going into it. So, when I think about things like that, I'm like, I think Elon probably is good at recognizing his 10x way to solve a problem and galvanizing engineers to solve that problem, even if, you know, but I don't think payments and creating the everything app is probably the way to that. That's not that type of problem. So that's my take there. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, he doesn't want this. I feel like
that's the key. Yeah.
I really don't understand. I mean,
I think he does.
Maybe
want it.
The best
I think
case-
he does now. I think he's once again, he's completely flip-flopped on this. He seems
to really, really wants it. It's no, all his ego. So our best case is he puts someone who does want this. If he finds someone who's willing to do it and does want to dig into this, I think it could be fine. Because it's not like the Twitter folks were really doing a bang up job, right? You know, they were just kind of mucking along, trying some stuff. But it was so there's actually the potential for someone to be appointed to do something really great with it.
Yeah.
But I would prefer.
Yeah, I would
to
prefer
see
it's
that
not
this motivates
Elon.
People. I want to see this turbocharged blue sky and other alternatives. I want to see this put up a bat signal to scare people that, as Jack has said, Twitter shouldn't be a company. It should be a protocol. And what does speech as protocol look like with value-added layers atop this?
I think that's a non-starter. I think that's even harder to do than a siloed. I mean, I hate to
Discord,
say it.
Discord starts down that path.
Well, yeah, but Discord's not taking over the world. I think
as a protocol?
I think that I agree with you, Jeff. I prefer to see it that way. But honestly, the way to financial riches, look, he's got to make up $44 billion.
Oh, I'm not saying Elon does this. I'm saying that this scares everybody else to get their acts together to do something.
Well,
that's the conversation. So yesterday
people,
when this came out.
People weren't scared by Facebook. I mean, honestly, this has been waiting for somebody to do, and lots have tried for a decade, and nobody has. And I think there's the network effect. There's a lot of strong reasons why it's almost impossible at this point to build a competitor. I think Elon has absolutely the inside track to create an everything app. If he acquires Twitter, he's got the inside track. It's not going to be an open standard. It's going to be a siloed, you know, you have to buy into it. He's going to have to somehow get people to go for it. I don't think it's going to be an easy thing to do.
He's going to have to invest three times what it costs to buy Twitter.
Maybe. But, you know, if the financial markets thought that he had a shot at it, look how much money they poured into Uber and WeWork. I mean, if they thought he had a shot at it, he would have no trouble raising the money. In fact, I think he has had no trouble so far. He's probably pitching this idea and has been for some time. It's clear to see what the upside would be of such a thing if you could do it. The fact that Facebook hasn't done it, I mean, Facebook's tried, that Apple has, I don't think Apple's really tried, but I think Apple's sensibly just, you know, stood and looked over the precipice and stepped back a little bit. Facebook's tried, though. They wanted to turn Messenger into the everything.
Which says everything about how difficult it is.
I don't think it's easy. Yeah.
No, not at all. And you know, I wouldn't be so, I think there's another scenario here, because Jack has been, to my surprise, seemingly an Elon ally in this, which says a lot about his relationship with the company. I'm sure that's part of it, but it's also about Blue Sky. And Elon has saluted that flag a bit. And Blue Sky has $5 million funding. That's all they have right now and four people. But Jay Graber is really smart. There's something there where if Jack could convince Elon that the future was as a protocol, like a WordPress open source base upon which you can build great value and build it faster as a result, then interesting things could happen. Jack could be a key to this, to pushing Elon in the right direction.
Everybody knows that's not where the money is. The money is where Cory Doctorow and Rebecca Gilbert.
The money ain't in Twitter.
No, they the talked money ain't about there. It. It's choke point capitalism. So, the money is in controlling. Is siloed. It's not an open anything. Open is the antithesis. This is why we love open. But open is not the way to make billionaires.
That's not true. Stacey, open can be used to make billionaires. It just needs to be open.
Who?
The lower...
Like Android. Android.
Android's not open. Well, are you kidding?
So
it's opener.
Hold on.
Are you kidding me?
It's opener. Like, look at the Intel architecture. That isn't open, but it's at a low enough level. And then Intel spent a lot of money. And I think it's also important they recognize that it was a platform and designed it as such. So you can design yourself to be like a walled garden, or you can be a platform. And I think that's... Mm-hmm. And I say Intel because, like, look at what Intel did. They were like, oh, crap, we've got a computing platform. We need more people to use it. So they funded, you know, EA. They funded all these companies who were like, heck yeah, use our computing platform. Contrast that with something like the carriers who were like, oh, man, broadband's amazing. They're going to build a whole economy on this. Let's charge them for every freaking penny, and then let's charge them some more. And that, like... That stymied the ecosystem till we found ways around it. So I think there's a difference. I appreciate what Corey is saying with choke point capitals. And I think most companies try to veer towards the carrier kind of model. But I think there's a lot of value in recognizing and creating a platform that allows enough people to make enough money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
That allows you to build out something that's really cool and literally does, I guess, lift all boats or whatever that phrase is. Does that make sense?
No, of course, I'm all for it, but that's not what concentrates $1 billion in the hands of one person. And that's what Elon wants to do. So be clear. I am all about open. That's fantastic.
Intel made a butt ton of money during their heyday.
Because they had, because they had an open architecture. They didn't have an open architecture. They made their own chips.
It was opener.
It was a platform as opposed to a
platform is not open. That's not an open platform.
I know. I'm not saying you need to be open. You need to have a mindset.
He needs to make a platform.
Build on top of your platform.
Yes, that's what he wants.
People
can build on top.
He wants Twitter to be a platform. Absolutely. But that's not federated green open.
No, but there are middle grounds. There are middle grounds. And blue sky could be a means of that where you tie in others. There's another scenario here, which is that he buys it. Anybody with any talent leaves. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. He turns it into the true cesspool that people call it now when it isn't. And the value goes down and down and down and down. And loans get called and other problems get hauled. And this could be the ruin of Elon Musk. That's another scenario.
I think that's probably more likely. But I'm rooting for him. Look, if he's going to take Twitter over, I want him to succeed because I don't want Twitter to go away.
That's like saying we still salute Donald Trump because he's president. At some point, believe who people are when they tell you. He's shown us
who
he is.
Are we done talking about
again
Elon?
And again.
I think we are. Let me see. Is there anything else that in that rundown that we care about?
I'd be curious if your audience, if anybody in your audience has used Planetary, which
so
is kind
this
of
is
a
something
Twitter.
You and... look,
I was with Mike Masnick yesterday. I'm a fanboy of Mike. I finally got to meet Mike in person. And with Daphne Keller, who's a brilliant legal scholar at Stanford on internet stuff, and somebody named Golda Velez, who was there. And this news happened while we were talking together at lunch at this conference. And so Mike brought up Planetary and said, you know, he showed it to me. He said, look, it looks exactly like Twitter. It's got a head start. And Golda was saying that the key is being able to export your graph from the likes of Twitter, and apparently you can do that.
No, you can export it to other people using that Planetary protocol.
Well, but that's the question. That's the question: is where does that look? Is, you know, is there any exit strategy that works?
Why do they keep reinventing this? I mean, look, we had GNU Social
because we've had this got ruined.
No, but we've had.
Oh, I see. The
we have this. We have. An open standard for this. There's no reason to reinvent this.
Right?
Well, Mastodon is one instance,
is a user.
But there's more than that. In fact, I don't know if you know about PixelFed. Do you know PixelFed? Which is a Mastodon Instagram photo sharing clone. It's based on Mastodon. It's open. there are a lot of there's, you know, it started way back when with, well, GNU Social, and before GNU Social was Identica. I don't know if you remember that, but this is a well-known, well-supported, strong open standard. Mastodon is just one instance of it. But, and I love Mastodon. We've been running our own Mastodon instance for years. It's not the next, it's not taken over. I don't understand why you think let's create another one is going to solve that.
Sometimes the time
just has to be right.
Exactly. There's a crisis now. And none of these companies is forever, right? FriendFeed did not take over the world. MySpace did not take over the world. Twitter, Facebook, and even Google are not forever companies. Yeah. And there's nothing to say that something could come along. The problem is they can't just replicate what was. They've got to improve upon it. And, you know, we heard Matt Mullenweg's strategy a few weeks ago, and he's now serving 40% of the web. Very quietly, by doing the open structure, by building a true platform. There are examples of succeeding that way, and Matt's plenty successful. Not as rich as Elon, no, but he's doing very well.
I would submit that's not the kind of success Elon's going for.
I don't care what Elon wants. I don't give a damn what Elon wants.
Well, I just point out that Elon's not going to do anything Elon doesn't want.
Right, and so that's why I think we've got to start looking for alternatives.
Okay, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. He's an idiot.
You're saying that Twitter's brilliant. You're saying Twitter's over the minute he takes over.
I fear that. I'm not going to leave. I was starting to say before, I greatly admire, and I mentioned him on the show often, Andre Brock Jr., who wrote Distributed Blackness, and I don't know. I just looked at his feed, and I haven't seen any comments lately. But after the whole Elon thing started, he said basically, "You're going to get us out of here with dynamite." Because we have something now, we build it now, and it's not public for the world to see, right? It's the Twitter that he talks about exists in its own world, and as long as it can survive there, like Lviv in the Ukraine war, then fine, keep going, and that's the way I look at Twitter now. I think it's what we've all just said. As long as it doesn't get too awful, we've got a lot invested in there. We're going to stick for now, but I'm afraid that it could get really awful.
It just struck
Mr. Jarvis,
me that
when you met ahead. With them yesterday, and the person who did you say showed you this planetary.social?
Mike Masnick showed.
Okay, so when Mr. Masnick showed it to you, were the words out of his mouth it's just like Twitter?
No. He was saying that Rabble, the guy who started Planetary, has a far more open, unalgorithmic view of social. And Mike just said, by the way, it kind of looks like Twitter. That was all. But as far as alternatives and where are, if we were to export our graphs somewhere, where might there be open homes for them? I don't know. Can Discord take that and take all my friends? Can Planetary, is there a friendly repository where we can start to rebuild after the nuclear bomb that Elon drops on our social world?
You can't do that. If you think of your social web like a community, and if you view this as being a bomb dropped on, you can't bring your entire community with you when you go.
No,
I mean, so you just have to accept like this.
What kind of head start can you have?
Well, no, you could just be like, I'm going to build a new community here. And I think that kind of idea of, if you view like your virtual life and your virtual relationships in parallel to your like real world ones, you know, if you move away or your friends move away or you leave college, for example, this might be like leaving college. Everybody goes to their own platforms and that was nice and you'll make new friends.
Yeah. I mean, it happened with MySpace. Yeah. It's happened before.
Yeah. I just don't like the idea of someone proposing a new app or service or whatever. And the first things out of their mouth is, hey, it's just like Twitter. Well, then.
I don't want to. Planetary didn't say that. Mike didn't say that.
Although it is just like Twitter.
No, but I'm saying, but I mean, a it's lot not of exactly innovating nowadays. Yeah. There's a lot of competitors are using that type of verbiage, whether it be a Twitter lookalike or whatever, or an Instagram lookalike, or, you know, everybody's sort of saying, hey, this is our version of Twitter. Well, if it's Twitter, then just stay there, you know?
It's an ancillary to the discussion about why does everybody start TikTok when there's TikTok? The competitive response is that everybody copies everybody rather than everybody out innovates everybody. And that's where we are right now. You know, I think it's the same thing, Ant, where you know, there's a whole list of things that are getting killed every week. It's, Google's killing them and others are killing them. And I think we're seeing, you know, Facebook is a sad retrenchment right now. Twitter, God knows what its fate is in the next month. Google is killing stuff and is not, and Leo's been saying this for a long time, but now I'll agree with him that it's not showing itself to be wildly innovative. The now legacy companies of the internet are getting to be kind of sad. And I don't think that the future is necessarily new big companies.
Well, but that's Sant's point well taken, which is the certainly not going to innovate by copying what exists today.
I agree. That's what I'm saying. And I think that's where we are now. I think we're in a it's like the phones. There's not really any innovation going on with the phones right now. They're incremental improvements. And I think the internet and how it works is incremental improvements. But I think, you know, I'm gonna do a Gutenberg moment, folks, a book coming out next June. It was 150 years after movable type before you got the essay, the novel, and the newspaper. And I think that we're in a stagnant time of not understanding what we can be. And there's going to be my students maybe will be the ones who surprise us, and I'll be long gone.
I want you to read Corey's book. You got to read Choke Point Capitalism. I'd love to get your opinion on it because I think Corey and his co-author Rebecca Gilbin have set out a very good description of why we are at this stage.
We're in a stage.
Yeah, but I don't think they're quite as sanguine about the end results as you are. It's a really good book, and Choke Point Capitalism, highly recommended. I also want to give credit to Kathleen St. J. McCormick. I don't know what the St. J. stands for, who is the judge at the Delaware Chancery Court, because I think she's actually been kind of savvy. It was her decision to release all those messages.
Yeah.
And I think that was a kind of a savvy move to kick Elon in the butt that worked. That was a little, hey, you know, we got more messages we could release, Elon, because of course it's in her interest, as it would be for any court, to get these parties to settle before they go to court. And what better way to get Elon off his duff than say, you know, we got these messages and we're going to have more. She published them. Great piece in Bloomberg, by the way, on the one person who did not embarrass himself in the texts, and that's Parag Agrawal.
Who's the victim in all of this.
Well, victim who's going to get $40 million plus as his as his golden handcuffs. But he stayed out of it. He, you know, even Jack Dorsey got in the middle. Agrawal just, you know, sat quiet. He said, I'm super excited about the opportunity. Looking forward to working closely and finding ways to use your time as effectively as possible to improve Twitter and the public conversation. Great message to Elon. That's, you know, they had a couple of back and forths. But Agrawal at every point stayed classy. Elon texted him April 5th, would be great to unwind permanent bans, you know, that is, except for spam accounts and those that explicitly advocate violence. I don't know why I have such a hard time saying Agrawal. Agrawal did not respond. He just,
let that sit there.
Okay. Instead, Agrawal invites Musk to talk about his specific technical ideas, asking him to treat me like an engineer instead of CEO. I promise I'll evaluate proposals neutrally. I want to hear all the ideas, and I'll tell you which ones will make progress on versus not, and why. In other words, he stayed classy, man.
Yeah.
So in all of this, props to two people. Parag Agrawal, the current CEO, I would say interim CEO of Twitter, and the judge, Kathleen McCormick, who I think pulled off a pretty savvy coup that worked by releasing at least this first tranche of messages and saying there are more to come.
I think I can channel Stacey right now to say we've done Elon.
We are done. I tried to end it a while ago. We are done. We got to talk about Stadia. We haven't even gotten to Stadia. But first, let me tell you.
Speaking of dead things.
About our sponsor, SecureWorks. SecureWorks is a leader in cybersecurity, building solutions for security experts by security experts. SecureWorks offers superior threat detection and rapid incident response while making sure that customers are never locked into a single vendor. You know, October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, which means now is the time to raise awareness about digital security and empower everyone to protect their data from cybercrime. SecureWorks has the perfect solution. Now's the time to get Taegis XDR. Why? In 2022, cybercrime will cost the world $7 trillion, with a T, $7 trillion. By 2025, that figure will be $10.5 trillion. Last year, ransomware totaled $20 billion in damages. Attacks occurred every 11 seconds. By 2031, ransomware is projected to cost 10 times more, $265 billion a year, and strike every 2 seconds. Make sure your organization is not the next victim with SecureWorks Taegis XDR. SecureWorks Taegis provides superior detection, identifying more than 470 billion security events every day. Let me say that one again. 470 billion security events every day. Prioritizing the true positive alerts, eliminating alert noise, and allowing organizations to focus on the real threat. In addition, Taegis offers unmatched response with automated response actions to eliminate threats before damage is ever done. With SecureWorks Taegis Managed XDR, you can easily leverage SecureWorks experts to investigate and respond to threats on your behalf. You can cut dwell times, decrease operational burden, and reduce cost. And with 24/7 by 365 coverage, whether you experience a Christmas Day security event or half your team is out sick, you can trust that SecureWorks is behind you. Many companies are facing a shortage of security talent. SecureWorks acts as an extension of your security team on day one, alleviating cybersecurity talent gaps and allows you to customize the approach and the coverage level you need. What happens if you've already found an intruder in your system? There's no need to worry. I want you to write down this number, 1-800-BREACHED. That number will connect you with the SecureWorks Emergency Incident Response Team, and they can provide you with immediate assistance 24/7 in responding to and remediating a possible cyber incident or data breach. At SecureWorks, you can learn more about the ways today's threat environment is evolving and the risks it can present to your organization, including case studies, reports from their counter threat unit, and more. Visit SecureWorks.com/twit to get a free trial of Taegis XDR. That's SecureWorks.com/twit. SecureWorks, defending every corner of cyberspace. We thank SecureWorks for supporting This Week in Google. Well, it was just inevitable. I thought we'd already talked about this, but I guess it came after Twig last week. Google has announced, despite denials as recently as July, yeah, well, I guess we're going to shut down Stadia after all. The good thing is they're going to refund any game and hardware purchases. Of course, your subscription fees will not be all refunded.
$2,000 worth.
Yeah. Well, it could be a lot. There is that one guy who played Red Dead Redemption for a total of 246 days.
Jeez.
Not all at once, mind you, but, you know, he played enough Red Dead Redemption, almost 600 hours, that his character very evolved. I'm sorry, did I say 600? 6,000 hours. Mm. And he's going to lose that character on January 1 when Stadia shuts down. He's a YouTuber. It's Color TV. He tweeted shortly after the news, "No, you don't understand how seriously pissed off I am." For context, these hours, all 6,000 on Google Stadia, when Google shuts down, my character, my 246-day-old character will disappear. He's begging Rockstar, the owner of Red Dead Redemption, to let him port his character from one to the other. I mean, that's probably the worst case scenario, but there are people who have invested some time.
So he can port the character?
No, not as of now. He's asking to.
He's asking.
Yeah. As of now, when Stadia shuts down, he will be out of luck.
Well, Google's has a policy on being able to export your stuff.
Yeah, but the Rockstar has to support it too.
So yeah, I know that.
Stadia was, and Ben Thompson points this out, it was a bad idea right from the very beginning. He says the problem with Stadia was it was a product in search of an idea that Google said, well, we've got this capability. We don't know anything about gaming, but we could make a service, a gaming service, and, you know, that wasn't enough. He says, here's why Stadia was a bad product, according to Ben Thompson, Stratechery. He quotes another writer, Devin Coldaway of TechCrunch, saying the technical implementation certainly wasn't to be faulted. At its best, Stadia was better than its competitors, almost magical in how it fulfilled the promise of going to zero to in-game in 1 second. The business side was never quite so inspiring. Ben says, I'd go farther. I'd say it was lazy and stupid. In fact, it was so lazy and stupid that I was far more optimistic than I should have been when I wrote up Stadia the first time. Google undoubtedly spent tremendous amounts of time, writes Ben, getting Stadia to work from a technical perspective, then proceeded to spend literally zero time figuring out a business model that made sense with streaming, much less actually marketing the service. I guess I can't disagree with that. They have some really great technical ideas, including the controller that was connected directly to Google's servers via Wi-Fi instead of through the game, which really made a difference in terms of latency. I played a few games on Stadia that played better on Stadia than they would play, like Cyberpunk 2077, than they would have played locally. But it's not exactly people. The only person who's crying is this one guy.
How much of a refund are you getting? How much did you spend?
I think only I spent subscription fees and bought one game. So maybe I'll get $60 back for Cyberpunk.
So can I ask you to reprise one of your favorite shticks, which is your disappointment in Google? And I'm starting to see it better after the collection of tombstones here. What's missing there? What's happening at Google?
Oh, actually, there's a very good, I think we've probably said this before. I don't know if I bookmarked it. There's a very good analysis that says the real problem is very simple. It's structural. I think maybe it was Mike Elgin who said this, that people get promotions for inventing a new product, but get no incentive for maintaining an existing product.
Wanted them. Yep.
So the whole way Google is set up is to create lots of new products and not support them. So, of course, what do you get? A Google graveyard. Because nobody's supporting these. We've been saying
it's
this kind of, for
it's
years.
What I do. I start new degrees, but then I'm smart enough to hire the people who actually run them, and I back off.
Well, and that's why Mike says the real problem is Sundar Pichai. It's at the top. It's leadership not solving this, not restructuring.
ADD, Google, everything. Yeah. All over the daggum place.
Yeah. I don't know who else you would blame.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty clear that that's the problem. Many, many people have said it. They've been saying it for years. Google incents people to come up with new ideas, but doesn't support them.
Do you think
them.
Larry and Sergey are saying, oh, we got to do something?
No. Or maybe.
I think they're done, so dialed out. So dialed
out. Yeah, they're done.
Here's a tweet. This is, I think, the one I saw from Hassan Ahmed. The single most important factor for promotion at Google is innovation. Google expects its employees to innovate. The more you innovate, the better your chances for promotion. No matter if you've fixed a million bugs, nothing doing, just innovate once and you move up. And this is, you know, quoting somebody.
That says a lot about Silicon Valley, too, doesn't it? I mean, it says it's about the whole culture.
By the way, this original post that he's quoting was from, I think, from 2016. 2018. We've literally been talking about this for 4 years.
Yeah.
We've known this was the problem. Say
it's kind of a bigger cultural problem. I'm going to say maybe an American problem. We optimize.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
We over-optimize for one thing. And you can think about like Wall Street optimizing for
quarterly
returns.
Profits. Yeah.
I mean, and that cuts out in Silicon Valley if you optimize for innovation, but you don't consider all these externalities. And we're probably making the same mistakes again when we look and try to tackle things that are complicated like climate change. Or you look at how we try to solve political issues. I mean, I think it's kind of an American issue. And maybe we should really consider that and think about how...
It's a really good point, Stacey.
I just don't know how to get around it. And do we, how to adopt from other cultures? Because not every culture does this. It is, others probably do, but I do think there's something uniquely American about it.
Yeah.
At the conference I was at yesterday, they brought out the old saw, which is America innovates and Europe regulates. And we still do end up innovating more than others, even for that. And so...
But at what cost? I do think that if you look at some of our innovations, they're not the best.
Throwing things against the wall to see if it sticks, huh?
Well, there's that, and then there's harms that come from it, and then there are harms that we embed in the system. So you look at something, let's just take Uber. So we were all like, well, cabs suck. This is terrible. This is great. Let's have Uber. And now we're looking at things like congestion. We're also recognizing that the costs associated with it are much higher, both from a externalities like congestion, the gig economy, the tax implications from that, and that we'll be paying for as like taxpayers. But also then think about the actual costs compared to like taxis. They're all kind of evening out. And we're like, oh, maybe this wasn't the way to do it. So, but that's what happens when you optimize for like one thing at the expense of all others, which is a very short-sighted way to do anything. I don't know either.
I wonder about products such as Google Photos and Drive. I guess they're safe because of all of the data and data mining that Google can do. Or are they even safe?
Yeah, I tweeted jokingly, when Google gets rid of search, but it's they're not much left. They could get rid of Drive and Gmail. Oh, that'd be just a disaster.
But see, there's a lot of daggum data in Gmail. We know they're reading the Gmail, so.
And well, they're starting to charge for it. So, don't worry. That's going to make money one day.
The other thing is, won't be killed.
That's true. But Stacey, you're right. Google was 98% ad revenue, and now I don't want us down to, but I think it's low 80s. And so they are bit by bit diversifying, and that diversification matters. The other way is the Clay Shirky rule, which is that technology only becomes interesting when it gets boring. And so maybe when the technology is something we just take for granted and we're bored, then we stop innovating in the technology itself and we start innovating in what we do with it. And that's what interests me a lot more. So
Google's going to be spending some time in the Supreme Court of the United States of America. As you know, this is October. This is when the Supreme Court announces its docket of cases. And on Monday, they announced a few things that they're going to hear, and they denied cert to some things they don't want to hear. David Lowry's efforts to get the justices to examine class action settlements that go to charities instead of individuals. This is something a lot of companies like to do. Okay, we'll settle, but we're not going to give the money to the plaintiff. Or the plaintiffs, we're going to give the money to charity. David Lowry was the founder of Camper Van Beethoven and Cracker.
What is that?
Two great bands.
okay.
Yeah, later in life.
Hum a few bars, Leo.
I don't. I would, but I can't because I don't want to.
We're going to take it down. Right. A nice excuse.
You've heard Cracker. You've heard them. Camper Van Beethoven was a big alternative band in the 90s. Later in life. Yeah. You don't know that?
I was a big alternative person and a teenager.
You never heard of Camper Van Beethoven? You heard of Cracker, I know.
I have heard of Cracker.
Yeah. Maybe because they were based out here in Northern California, I'm maybe more aware of them.
Oh.
So you're just hipper, Leo.
Perhaps you've heard their song, Take the Skinheads Bowling. All right, that's all I can play. That's all I can play. Anyway,
as you were saying before, you were so rudely
Lowry, after his great success in those bands, became an advocate of filing suits against Spotify and Napster, later Google, for settling class actions by giving settlement money to charities. In fact, charities, it turns out, took the tech giant's side against him on copyright controversies. He did not get his cert, but the Supreme Court did take up Reynaldo Gonzalez versus Google.
Ooh, scary.
Yeah, this is one that could really undermine Section 230, this Communications Decency Act. So let me see if I can summarize. The appellants, Reynaldo Gonzalez et al., are family members of a 23-year-old who was murdered by ISIS terrorists, while studying in Paris. They sued Google. They want to hold them responsible for allegedly offering assistance to terrorists by recommending ISIS videos in its algorithm. And the justices agreed, yeah, we should hear this case.
Ooh, that is dicey.
So the question, I guess, boils down to whether Section 230 immunizes algorithms. It immunizes publishers, but does it immunize algorithms? So this is really going to be a case about how content gets algorithmically boosted.
Yeah, Stacey, I share your headache.
Should Google lose, I'm quoting now from my favorite Puck News, Eric Gardner writing in this, should Google lose, it'll poke a huge hole in Section 230 and probably lead to a wave of tort litigation around the country. Facebook and TikTok, for example, could expect to see lawsuits for leading users into various forms of addiction. There have already been suits along those lines. It isn't the last line of defense. It's kind of more a Maginot line. It's because Section 230, justices often just throw out these suits. Now they might proceed, but it doesn't mean they would lose because there's still a First Amendment defense. So, but it is a defensive line that would be destroyed. The court did make a decision in favor of Netflix earlier this year. Netflix was sued by a teenager whose suicide allegedly was triggered by their movie 13 Reasons, or their show 13 Reasons Why, which was about teenage suicide. The family sued over Netflix recommendation algorithm. Netflix asserted
consequences.
Netflix asserted there is no difference between an algorithm and a human editor, and the court agreed. So Netflix won. That's the only precedent, I guess, in this area. We'll watch that one. So what in October, the first Monday, they announce what they're going to hear, and then they hear those cases over a period of months, and then they don't need to actually release decisions until later next year, like the summer, like July, right?
June. They do it in June.
Okay. So we've basically put
everyone on notice, is what you're saying?
They get a stack. We talked about this yesterday, and I learned how to pronounce certiorari.
Is that how you say
certiorari?
It?
Certiorari. That's what Jason Snell says is how you say it. And I said, oh, that's a long way to certiorari. But that was another show for another time. So certiorari. So what happens is you don't have a right to appeal to the Supreme Court. If you lose a case with a lower court, you then file and say, hey, please, Supreme Court, could you look at this? They then decide. And the way it works is they have a rotating panel of four justices have to agree. Each justice takes a certain, there's a big stack, takes a certain amount. I'm told what really happens is their clerks take the stack, write up opinions on whether the court should take up this case or not. If the court says, yeah, we're not going to take up the case, as it did with the Lowry case, that's it. You're done. There's no, that's, you know, they're not interested. If they do, it's an effect of an appeal. Now you can argue it before the Supreme Court. And that's the final, obviously, the highest court in the land, the final decider. So that's called, the process called cert or certiorari, because nobody wants to say certiorari in public. And so there's cert for one and not cert for other. Lowry did not get cert. But this interesting case, Reynaldo Gonzalez versus Google, did. There will also be some other decisions. This is an interesting one. Remember Genius, the rap Genius? Remember them?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't yet heard whether they, I don't, at least as of the last time I checked, whether they're going to give cert to this, but they've been asked to investigate a petition that could be interesting. Rap Genius, do you remember this? We talked about it. Was sure that Google was taking its song lyrics. You know, that's what they did. Rap Genius would give you the lyrics. Oh, you know, flying up here, burning my flame alone, or whatever Elton's singing. They would, you could go there and they would say, oh, yeah, that's what this says. So the company, thinking Google was doing this in their search results, laid a trap. They swapped the original apostrophes for a sequence of straight and curly ones that spelled out, remember this, red-handed in Morse code. Yep. And, of course, Google fell for it and was caught copying the lyrics red-handed. One problem.
Ironic, since Genius itself was taking lyrics.
Exactly. Right. It turned out the Rap Genius was, in fact, making transcripts, but they didn't actually own the lyrics. The publishing company and the songwriters did. So Google, you know, Genius attempted to hold Google responsible, but Google successfully argued the claim was preempted by copyright. You don't have the copyright. Well, now this is going to the Supreme Court. Genius is represented by the same lawyer, Josh Rosenkrantz, who represented Oracle in its battle against Google way back when. Over the fair use of computer code. Remember that? This time, Rap Genius says it's the visitor terms and Google's not adhering to those. You can't. It's wrong to measure whether a contract claim is qualitatively different from a copyright claim, as the Second Circuit insists, but many appellate circuits in the nation don't. The petition adds that having copyright law wipe out sacrosanct contract remedies, like, you know, our website terms. I didn't know they were sacrosanct. They're sacrosanct. Leads to absurd outcomes.
I thought they were sacrosanct.
They're sacrosanct. Sacrosanct. hobbling digital services like Yelp and Wikipedia that depend on user-generated content, et cetera, et cetera. So this will be very interesting. There were some interesting amicus briefs filed in this case. Actually, the best amicus brief of this session comes from The Onion. Have you heard about this one?
Yes.
You don't want to hear about it, Stacey?
Grumpo.
I'm just grumpy. Just keep going.
I get through it.
I don't have to do this story if you don't like it.
No, it's I feel like everybody has been talking about it. It's just like, I'm like, yes.
Have you heard it over and over? Like, did NPR already cover this on Morning Edition? Did you hear about it last night on All Things Considered? I mean, am I taking a page out of the NPR?
No, five of our podcasts talked about it this week, I'm sure.
Basically, like three of my news sources and NPR and probably
it is a great story, but if you've heard it over and over again, I probably should.
But your audience probably
they don't listen
not.
To NPR. Yeah.
No. God bless them. That's why we love them.
I'm being stupid. Okay, I'll do this quick. How about that? I just want to, honestly, I just want to read from the brief. That's all. You know
that. Yeah, because it's fun.
The case is an amateur comic from Parma, Ohio, who posted on Facebook a fake social media page pretending to be the Parma Police Department's Facebook page, mocking them. The police didn't like it, and they arrested him. Threw him in jail. Civil suit alleging his constitutional rights were violated was dismissed after a federal appeals court said police officers, even in this, have qualified immunity. Wow. That's really, they can do anything, right? Apparently. The appellate judges said there is no recognized right to be free from a retaliatory arrest that is supported by probable cause. Novak is asking the Supreme Court to take this case up. I think they should. The supporting brief filed by The Onion because they want to support parody.
By the way, it's not cheap to file a brief. You really have to get real lawyers. You've got to do all this stuff. It costs money to do a brief.
The Onion called the Supreme Court.
That is literally their business.
They called the Supreme Court Latin dorks. Which may be a questionable strategy.
Well, they're being called worse these days.
Yeah. They said they are the world's leading news publication with a daily readership of 4.3 trillion that has grown into the single most powerful and influential organization in human history. Obviously, that's a joke. And that the point being, you don't announce parody ahead of time or disclaim it afterwards. That eliminates the point of parody. The Onion cannot stand idly by in the face of a ruling that threatens to disembowel a form of rhetoric that has existed for millennia, that is particularly potent in the realm of political debate. And I think that they're absolutely, absolutely right.
Yes.
So,
best headline I saw, I think it was Washington Post, local man arrested for parody.
local man, of course, is one of the favorite terms of art in Onion headlines. And I agree, you know, honestly, I agree with the Onion on this one. I hope the Supreme Court does the right thing. One never knows these days what the Supreme Court is going to do. And that is our Supreme Court, I think it's up, done, our Supreme Court docket of the week. Yes, was there anything else?
Goes wild. Said,
nope,
I think that's the good one. Google is in court and has been fined $85 million in Arizona. They settled for $85 million to end an Arizona consumer privacy suit. The state sued Google in 2020, claiming they surreptitiously collected data on users' whereabouts for targeted advertising. Well, duh. They violated the Consumer Fraud Act by gathering location data even after you opt out of a feature that records location history. We've talked about this before. You could turn that off, but there is another place you need to turn it off for Google not to follow you around. Google said, well, the state consumer protection law requires fraud. It has to be connected to a sale or advertisement. They requested in January, the judge denied Google's request to dismiss. It is the largest amount per individual user Google has ever paid in a privacy and consumer fraud lawsuit. $85 million, of which probably nobody's going to get much except the lawyers. Google's also being sued over this by other states and Washington, D.C., so it may not be over completely. And I thought this was interesting. I don't know if this is tech, but I got to mention this since we're talking about courts. Walmart and CVS are on trial for putting homeopathic products next to real meds, thereby giving some sort of implied value to homeopathic medicines.
Got to tell you, sir, when I saw this in the rundown, I was like, is this a mistake?
Why? Because it's not tech?
It didn't give me a tech angle. What's the angle?
Well, I think there's no tech angle. I just think that it's probably a good thing to reinforce that homeopathic remedies are a medieval concept that has no justification in science whatsoever.
Yeah, here's the tech angle for you, is that Google gets in trouble for that, and Facebook gets in trouble for that, for what they choose to advertise.
Yeah, but not Walmart, right?
But not Walmart. Yeah,
okay. Yeah. And Walmart does, right, you know, put these fairly expensive. I mean, it's partly that you're spending money on what is effectively water if you're buying a homeopathic medicine.
What I want to know is,
there's some danger potentially though as well.
Did the homeopathic remedies pay for that shelf space? It pays for space.
I don't know. And, that's interesting.
What is the implied, if a blogger has to, under FTC rules, reveal if you got a free pen if I write about it, Vogue magazine doesn't have to, but the blogger does. What about Walmart? Is the paid placement an issue here?
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Because when we put Entertainment Weekly out, rack space was very expensive.
Yeah. And the question is a consumer being misled by the fact that these homeopathic remedies are put next to...
And can Walmart be bought?
Actual remedies. Yeah, I don't... Actually, I'm looking at this article in Ars Technica, and I don't see that as being in part of the issue.
I wonder.
Yeah, that's
interesting. The shelf space, I mean, for... If you have
I think they're holding...
I watch Shark Tank, and I know well that from Mark Cuban, that if you want to get your chips on the grocery store shelf,
you got to buy placement. That's right. That's how grocery stores make money for the most part.
Exactly.
Yep.
It's marketing
in
space.
Caps.
Two lower D.C. courts said that the placement on the shelves with real medicine did not constitute an actionable representation as to efficacy, but appeals court judges overruled.
Efficacy.
Are you complaining about my positioning of the syllables?
Yes.
It's sacrosanct, man.
It's Saint Croissant.
Efficacy.
Saint Croissant?
Efficacy.
Okay.
Efficacy. But they're efficient, so I thought they'd be
efficacy.
It's like a fricassee.
Okay, hey, how do you say is it fricassee? Time for the change?
Do you say fricassee? Fricassee? You just want to get this over with, don't you? Don't you?
He wants to torture you.
I am losing
so much fun.
Don't you?
I am losing so much steam. It's so sad. I'm sitting here and I'm like,
it's time for the Google Change Log.
The Google Change Log. It's a good thing Jason's not here because there's not much in it, so it'll be fast. It's okay, Stacey.
Samsung rolling out Android 12 to more devices. Four new Maps update. Google Home app getting a website.
That's what we should be talking about.
Home app is getting better.
Section.
But barely getting
wrong.
Better.
Wrong?
Wrong?
Wrong.
You disagree?
Home app is going to be much
with the
better.
The great Ben Schoon, who says the Google Home app is getting better, but barely? It is pretty bad, though. You will acknowledge that.
It is horrifying, but it's going to be much better. And it's going to pull in all this cool stuff that we've wanted forever. It's going to solve the Nest camera issue where any of your old Google Nest cams work only on the Nest app, not on the Home app, but only your new ones work on the Home app, so you can't see your other ones. It's such a cluster F. But now,
Charlie Foxtrot.
Not now. Soon. Soon they release it in preview, and then early next year, we're going to get a Google Home app that has all the functionality for your Nest cameras on your Home app. You're going to be able to see live video feeds. You're going to get the moments that you can get on the Nest thing. Eventually, they're going to bring your older Nest cams into the Home app, so you can then see all your cams in the same place. They'll also bring those cameras to the web. That's amazing. And even better, for the super nerds, you're going to get a script editor for your Home. And thanks to Matter, Google Home for setting up routines is going to allow you to use sensors to trigger routines, especially sensors that are not part of Google's ecosystem. That's a lot of really exciting things. We didn't even talk about Google launching a new doorbell or their 6E Wi-Fi. Man.
They are offering a good new Google Wi-Fi base stations that are incompatible with existing ones, but do offer 6E.
Okay, I know they're incompatible with existing ones, but how many of us buy? Well, this is stuff I care about, like Elon Musk.
I know.
Shelf space.
Plunk.
Okay, Wi-Fi 6E.
Plunk.
S.
Plunk. But Matter. Woo-wee, how exciting!
It is exciting. And it relates to Google, darn it.
Oh, you thought because the show was called This Week in Google that it would be about Google. I understand the disconnect here. Now I get it.
I know that's my fault.
I understand.
Silly Stacey.
Silly Stacey. So, that was an oversight. I forgot to mention these new products. Did Google announce this in an event? No. I thought mostly we'd be talking about
Tuesday.
This tomorrow. They put this out
tomorrow
yesterday.
I can't tell you what tomorrow is.
Tomorrow's a Pixel 7 and the Pixel Watch and possibly some other stuff. 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern time.
Are you covering it?
I will. Ron Richards and I will be here in our jammies. Actually, Ron is in the East Coast, so he'll
be awake.
Fully caffeinated.
You on the other hand.
I'll be like, I'm that way at 9 o'clock for Stacey's book club, 7 a.m.
That is true.
So they already did announce, though, these updates. Tell me about this, Stacey. The Google Wi-Fi.
They announced two devices. One is a wired Nest doorbell for $179.99.
How is that different than the Hello that I have?
It doesn't have quite all the features of the Hello.
Oh.
I think it's cheaper, too.
It's a less expensive.
It comes in different colors.
I have the second generation. Oh, no, there was a battery powered one last year. I have a wired
one. This is the wired version of the battery powered one that was announced last year.
Should I upgrade my version one wired one for this?
It's got 960 pixels. I can't remember what the other does, but Google says that it's better because their pixels are larger. They're using basically computational video.
So it's lower resolution than the original doorbell, but it's HDR.
Right. So it's more visibility. I don't know.
It can handle bright lights. Because a lot of times this is the case with doorbells, especially at night. If you've got lights or traffic lights or street lights or house lights, they can blind the camera. So this will be better.
It has the traditional activity zones. They both have that.
Two-way audio with noise cancellation.
I mean, yeah.
IP54 water and dust resistance. A lot of this is similar. You have to buy an extra subscription. Yeah, it's all pretty much. I mean,
it is smaller. If you want a smaller doorbell, the mounting holes are actually the same. So if you replace it, it'll be easy.
Yeah.
Right. Unless you're unhappy with your doorbell, I wouldn't.
I'm not. And it's part of me resents the new doorbell.
I'm kind of like, I am not. I did not get into tech reporting to write freaking doorbell reviews.
Yeah.
I did not want to sit through all of that. But that's just me.
What did you get into tech reporting
for?
We're just curious.
I like to know how the world works.
Inquiring minds want to know what subjects I should put into next week's show. Okay.
The nerdier, the better.
By the way, whose house do these colors match?
I don't know. They were like, they'll match or create a pop of color. And I'm like,
oh, I see those colors now. That gray I see constantly now. It's all the home shows have that.
Neutral. Yeah, everything's neutral now. So these are neutral, ugly ass neutral colors. Okay.
So those exist.
$180
And then
bucks.
The Nest Wi-Fi Pro adds, so this is Google's next mesh Wi-Fi system. It is not backwards compatible, but when's the last time you bought a mesh Wi-Fi system and bought like an upgrade extended? You don't. You buy them in a set. So
a new
who the hell cares?
Yeah. Well,
this one is notable because it has six. Okay.
I spent money on the other ones. Go ahead. Yeah.
But you probably bought it like 3 years ago, and that's about how often. 3 to 5 years is when you buy a new router.
Yeah.
So these support speeds up to 5.4 gigabits per second. They come in four colors, including lemongrass. I don't know. Each access point
are they
provides
shiny?
Puce. Does it come in puce?
This is interesting.
They're shiny.
They've left behind the fabric design that everything used to be fabric colored from Google. Now this is like shiny, like ceramic.
Yeah. It's like plastic. Anyway, each access point covers 2,200 square feet. It's tri-band, which means it brings in 2.4 and 5, which we're all used to. It also adds 6 gigahertz, which is the relatively uncluttered spectrum that the FCC approved in 2020. So that only matters, though, for other 6E devices. So 6E is the 6 gigahertz designation. So if you've got Wi-Fi 6E, it's going to have that.
I think Apple's new phones are 6E. Their new laptops
are. So you're going to see it on your phones, your laptops. You're going to start seeing it on gaming consoles and possibly TVs. The benefit is going to be for like, because it's a lot of spectrum. You can get a lot of data in there and it's going to be amazing. It's not good for the IoT. So don't look for it there because your IoT devices are too cheap to have a tri-band radio.
Right.
And those are going to be
$129 for one. October 27th, $200 for a one pack, $300 for a two pack, $400 for a three pack. Two pack's dead though, so just get the three pack.
And then they also have security. Like they're not charging you for security, and like some of the other router companies charge you a fee for like
that's nice. Yeah, it's $99 a year extra for Eero Pro, so that's nice.
And they killed their cheaper version last week when Amazon did the device launch.
So, Wired says they are shiny like a Tic Tac. Like a giant Tic Tac on your shelf.
Yeah, so shiny. Didn't know that.
No, they're not. Like actually, it says looks glossy like a shiny Tic Tac. So I guess you'd have to get a shiny Tic Tac. You're right. They're not. They're matte.
Well, let's now investigate. Are Tic Tacs shiny?
They have any Tic Tacs? They're matte.
They're matte.
Yeah.
This is going to drive Stacey. We could do a 5-minute conversation just to drive Stacey crazy going off on TikTok. But we won't do that.
Today on the Pixel 6, I got my update for October, the October 5th security update. Bad news. If you have a Pixel 4, it's the end of the line. That's the last you're going to get. End of life for the Pixel 4, the crappy Pixel, I think some people call it. I never called it that. I thought the 4 was better than the 5, but anyway, it's the end of life after 3 short years of service for Pixel 4. You will not, normally there's kind of like one last update. No, that's it. You're done. This is the one. This is the one very famously that Rick Osterloh, like days before they launched, told his employees, I don't agree with some of the decisions you made, and I'm really disappointed with the battery power. What? Mark, that's why when Mark Lavoie, the camera guy, the brilliant camera guy, left and went to Adobe and Mario.
Is that Adobe now?
Yeah. So, I think the Pixel 6s have been pretty good. Now that you have a new one, you like it. Again, we will talk about the 7 tomorrow, and we will decide whether it's worth an upgrade for Pixel 6 owners, but definitely if you're Pixel 4, possibly if you're Pixel 5, you want to look at the Pixel 7.
And I don't know if I said it the last time we talked about the update. People were fussing about the battery life being crap after the update, and then they had to patch it. And I got the patch, and it took it about 2 days. And then my battery life was way better.
It's good.
Great. I'm glad at 74% right now at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, I don't feel any reason to upgrade the 6. I love my 6. I think it's great.
No, 6 is fine.
We'll find out tomorrow. They'll give us reasons. It's Tensor 2. It's the sad thing about tomorrow's
event. If
it
weighs less, I might get it.
Because you have famously floppy wrists.
Queen floppy wrists.
You know, this is one of those cases where there is not going to be anything new tomorrow. I'll be shocked if there is. Everything's been leaked by retailers, by Amazon.
Stacey, did you get a NDA? You seem to hint you might know something tomorrow.
I honored their embargo.
Embargo.
Yes.
So I have one question, only one question. Is Leo right or wrong about there being any surprises?
I can't tell you because I have an embargo.
Oh, exciting. Exciting. Do you want to join me?
I couldn't give you any indication whatsoever. I'm not going to be a dick.
Do you want to join me tomorrow morning at 7 a.m.? Join Ron and me and talk about it?
No. But you know what? I'm coming on.
You could have acted like you were torn, Stacey.
How did I know?
You could have acted like it took you a minute to decide that.
How did I know?
Yeah, jeez.
No.
But what? No. You're going on somebody else's show to talk about it?
I'm good. What, is it all about Andrew? What's
the Guardian
show tomorrow?
Tech News Weekly. You're going to go
News,
on their
that's
show.
It. I was like,
yeah, he's going to talk.
I'm on their show.
She's going to talk Matter tomorrow.
Oh, you're going to talk about Matter, but you may talk about the Pixel 7. I would bet with Micah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's okay. I don't think he wants me to talk to him about that.
Oh, he will.
Oh, he will.
Once he learns that you have information, I think he might.
It'll have happened by then.
Oh, you have information that we're all going to know tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I sent the devices to Kevin.
If a Google billionaire can't make flying cars happen, can anyone? Kitty Hawk, the air taxi startup Larry Page funded, is dunded. Da-da-da. There's Larry saying, why did I put so much money into this?
We haven't seen him in ages.
I know. I think that's the talk where he's saying, I wish we had an island.
I think it was the island talk. I think that actually was my thought, too. Yeah.
Decade ago, the flying car company was seen as one of the most likely to make breakthroughs in all the Google moonshots. Guess not.
No taxis.
Guess not.
We're stuck with Uber.
Yeah.
No
Kitty
flying
Hawk is
Uber.
Gone. And lest you take Google Maps too literally, you might want to look at this tweet from Jason Scott at Text Files, a series of pictures from real world places where Google Maps is wrong.
I love this.
Wrong.
Oh, that's fun.
Dead end. No lake access. Google Maps is wrong. Or Google is wrong. This road does not go through to Canyon Creek Trailhead. Turn around. Or Google Maps is wrong. This is not Matthew Court. Private road.
The thing is, they're all signs that they went and had made professionally because it happened all the time.
Here's one that was not made professionally, made with a stencil and spray paint. Google Maps is wrong, and they won't fix it. This is not the way to Keilaakinkua Bay. So don't go that way. It's a private road. Do not enter. Man, there must be like a dozen people a day go down that road to make them make that sign.
Yeah, isn't that hilarious?
That's the beauty of, by the way, OpenStreetMaps is you can fix it. You can fix it.
I have Google thinks
my house. Yeah, but you had those issues.
Five doors down.
Something just skittered across your floor.
Yeah.
Whose?
Yeah, it's a large Mine? Rat. Yeah, bring the rat over here.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's just a pet.
Yes, it's Lily.
Burke has a weird, I don't know, he's a little, it's
that floor. I think you meant mine.
Oh, it's so cute. Sorry, I just was like, what the, just ran across the, my
God. You scared me to death, Stacey.
She's the sweetest. And you know what?
She scares Stacey.
Because she took a shower with you. Right?
Look at that
precious little angel. This is how you get Stacey to stick around for the show. I figured out. We don't have to talk about chess. We don't have to talk about homeopathic
semiconductors.
All we need is a puppy.
None of those things, puppies.
Oh, what a sweetie. What's the name?
Such a sweetie. What's her name?
Lily.
You're not going to change it? Lily. Is that the new name?
It's Lily.
That's the only name.
You're not going to change it. Passive-aggressive grandparenting right there.
No. There were names given to these pups. Burke's mom and dad had five. Chewy was the name. So you did change it. I think Lily is much better than Chewy. Uh-oh. Uh-oh, the boss is coming. The boss doesn't like me handling Lily. The boss says... Lily belongs to me. Actually, Lily has a sister that is earmarked. What do you call it?
I'm the adopted mommy.
What?
I'm the adopted mommy.
Oh, she's the adopted mommy. I thought you said you adopted mommy.
He's like, I now have a pet.
She's very,
just like
Lily's
this one.
Very sweet. Yeah. So Chewy was the original name. Yeah, Lily's much better. Yeah.
Chewy's funny. I like Chewy.
Because she does look like a Wookiee.
He does look like Chewy.
A baby Wookiee. You look good with that dog in your arms. You're natural. Oh, she is really about the sweet. What are they? They're toy poodles? They're mixed, but I think there's poodle in there. Yeah. They're not purebred. Yeah.
Very
but she's not
going
to get much bigger. They said her dad is really small.
Oh,
isn't that sweet? And that's the Google changelog.
Stacey, you scared me. I didn't know whose house you were talking about, and I thought there was a rat in my house.
I'm sorry. I just saw something skitter across in the bed, and I was like...
I've just learned her full name is Lily Rosemary and the Jack of Hearts, which I'm guessing is a reference to... an Humphreys McGee song? I don't know. Huh? Bob Dylan. Lily Rosemary and the Jack of Hearts. Oh, yeah. Now I know what you're talking about. Do you have a thing for us, Ms. Stacey Higginbotham?
Oh, I do. I didn't know we were
You're there already. You survived, Stacey. You've arrived.
I've arrived at that moment and woofully unprepared. I'm unboxing
the festival
device,
was
y'all.
Over. The boys were planning for a fall. The cabaret was quiet, except for the drilling on the wall. The curfew had been lifted and the gambling wheel shut down. Anyone with any sense had already left town. I'm just filling for you.
I know. That's why I'm apologizing.
Backstage, the girls were playing Five Card Stud by the Stairs. This is a great song. I forgot about this song. It's from Blood on the Tracks, right? Yeah, one of the great... great albums of all time. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this musical interlude brought to you by Stacey's Thing of the Week.
It looks like a heat sink, but it
does.
Is not.
What is it?
I was like, it looks like a heat sink. This is Everything Set. I wrote about this company about a year ago. And this is a box. It's kind of like a firewalla, except the end application is a little bit different. So what happens is I plug this into my network. It's going to act as a bridge to my router. All of my device data is going to go through this. And what's going to happen is I'm going to get on their app a score. And the score is going to be like from 1 to 10. I think it's 1 to 10 unless they changed it. It's going to say things like, your home is super secure or your home sucks. And I know, had I been in town last week, I would have had it available and plugged in, but I don't plug in new devices without my family, like when I'm leaving. But I will let you know how it is. And it's a device and a service, and it's designed to basically help me assess how secure and high quality my devices are, if they're doing anything weird, but it is not giving me the log type data that I get from like a firewall. So it's maybe a little bit more friendly for normal people. I don't know if this is the level of information your audience will want, but it might be good
information.
What do
you mean your audience? I mean, they're your audience too, you know.
I feel like my audience is actually a little less nerdy, believe it or not. I feel like your audience is very tech savvy.
Your audience is very nerdy.
Oh, no, your audience is. Because it's nerdier to have a subset of nerddom.
That's right. The more focused you are.
Nerd interest. But you have a high interest in the subset of nerddom. That's nerdier.
So don't you use a firewall? I feel like you're a firewall.
I do. That's why I didn't plug this there in because right I didn't want to.
Oops, sorry about the noise. This Whoa. Is a lady talking about why. I don't know what salad has to do with the Roomba. With the
they give us convenience.
This is a long way to go.
It's telling you. It's about security. Telling you the devices.
Yeah.
So it does tell you, like, it gives you alerts and warnings. And I don't think you can buy this yet, but I'm really interested.
Yeah, it's early access.
Basically, it's a device I'm playing with and testing. And it's a score. Yeah, it is a 1 to 10 score. So higher is more secure. Lower is insecure. So next week, after I plugged it in, I'll come back and tell you.
So it doesn't actually block it. It just tells you what's going on.
It gives you alerts and warnings, but it doesn't.
I guess it wouldn't want to block it because that would break functionality.
Right. You don't like I can my firewall will quarantine things if I tell it to. But normally it just sends me a notification that's like, you've got some UNP, whatever acronym. Help me. I'm losing it. Port forwarding going on here. And I'm like, oh, no. And then, you know, it'll be like, did you mean to leave this?
UPnP, Universal Plug and
Play. UPnP. That's it. That was like UNPPQRAMQCOAP. QTT.
So this is interesting. They're giving it. It sounds like they're giving it away in a year of service for $10 of setup fee, just because they want the growth.
Yes, they have their early access program right now. Maybe I shouldn't have shown you all this.
Well, it's on the it's on the webpage. Everything.
Okay. Good.
Set.com.
Everything set.
Yeah.
Everything set Inc. Or everything.
So set. Really, it's almost a research project on what kind of information IoT devices are spitting out.
Well, they do want it. It's a venture-backed company that will eventually charge you money. Or maybe they're going to sell this data. I know they want to go corporate. So their whole hope is that, like, with people working from home, is that people will, like, corporations, like, if you work for IBM, they'll give you this because IBM has a vested interest in their computers being on a secure home network.
Yeah.
And then, so that's, I think, their big plan. We'll see. But I'm excited to try it.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting.
We should have more tools like this.
Is it compatible with a firewall or other security devices? No. Just one
this
or
is,
the other.
This is I don't need to be daisy chaining like six DPI things. My network will be like.
Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, I mean, to some degree, you're right. Certainly our Security Now listeners are probably more interested in a roll your own solution like PFSense and. You know, they can do all this stuff with a device of their own making, so to speak. But for a normal person, this might be quite an eye opener.
And that's probably like that's what I think would be the case, right?
Right.
And I think if you imagine them going after the corporate audience, then that makes sense because you would not want to like if I gave a firewall a like. If I gave a firewall to my sister-in-law, I don't think she would ever plug anything else in again, right? She'd be like, oh, my God. So
Steve generally talks about, this is what he uses. It's from NetGate. It's a security gateway that runs pfSense. It's $189. Similar idea. It's like a small, you know, IoT device, but it's a full, that's a full internet gateway. And of course, one of the things you could do is look at the kinds of traffic that's being sent out and so forth. So
yeah,
that's a little, I mean, that's a little more geeky. It's too geeky for me. I don't want to set this up, but it's a good choice if you want something even more horsepower. Numbers, Mr. Jeff Jarvis, numbers.
So the Washington Post had a fascinating story using data that is also on the rundown. I just added it. For the most common restaurant cuisine in every state and a chain restaurant mystery. And the mystery is this. Why does it correlate? And notice I said correlate, not cause. Why does it correlate that the states with the areas, the places with the most chain restaurants voted for Trump over Biden? Now, we could go and start to make a trailer trash joke, but I, as a fan of Taco Bell, I hope you don't.
What is what are the number one chain restaurants in places like Kentucky, West Virginia? Is it Stuckey's? Waffle House?
Give me Waffle House. If you click for 100.
On the next link in the well, let me get to the punchline here first, because the spoiler is. So they checked on education. They checked on all kinds of things, and they did not find correlation between the restaurants and what was going on. And what they found was it was car culture.
Yeah, that
makes places sense. With more cars.
Of course,
also more for Trump. And I think
California has a lot of cars. I mean,
yeah,
we're definitely a car culture up here in Petaluma. I don't think,
but you also have buses and things there.
We're not.
If you go to the next, link on
Washington.
Washington's big on Asian food. Most of the West and Southwest is Mexican, as you would expect.
Midwest is pizza.
You know, here's a weird story. The only place where Hawaiian is number one is down here in Hawaii. I thought that was interesting.
Funny how that works.
There's the pizza belt.
Pub in the upper Midwest, which really means beer.
Yeah. But the blue is the fast food belt. Idaho, Utah, yeah. Missouri, and the Southeast.
So if you go to the next link in the rundown, sir.
Yes. Oh, wait a minute. I'm not done.
In the rundown.
In the rundown. Oh, okay.
There's the data because you can play. It's interactive.
Oh.
You can now put in one of your chains on the right there and see where they are.
Oh, interesting.
So on there it comes up. Select an option. No, just stay in the U.S., please.
A&W's, Applebee's.
Any of the restaurants
we do,
you want.
We'll do Waffle House.
Let's do Waffle House.
Is that your recommendation, Ant? Well, the Waffle Houses are all over the place.
No. That's just...
There we are. This is Waffle House country right here. No Waffle Houses out in the West.
Take me back.
But Arizona has quite
Arizona
a few.
Has some.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about Stuckey's? I always think of Stuckey's when I think of the South. They don't even have Stuckey's. Are Stuckey's gone?
I've seen Stuckey's, but not in the South.
What about Denny's?
Oh, we
Denny's,
just are
seen that in the South.
We're
too,
so excited! Our new Denny's is just opening up Denny's. Here in Petaluma. We got the new
what
Denny's.
Very Popeyes or Santa Mr. Rosa. Bojangles? Are you a Bojangles or a Popeyes person?
I'm a Popeyes person, but Popeyes. Bojangles is more popular in the Carolinas.
Mr. Bojangles. Okay, yeah. Oh, you look at that! It is definitely Kakalaki country. Wow. Woo-wee.
Versus Popeyes.
Should we look at Popeyes?
Yeah, sure.
This is completely worthless. No, that's Papa John's. Wait a minute, hold on.
I think you were just looking at Popeyes. Right?
I was. Louisiana Kitchen threw me. They're all over now. They're everywhere.
It's growing.
They're everywhere.
They're not enough near me.
Yeah, best chicken sandwich.
Oh, how about White Castle? Oh,
no,
there's no White
that.
Castle in here.
Not what one of the biggest, I guess.
What kind of stupid... Okay. you can... I'm filtering. I'm filtering here. Filter frequency less than or equal to 20. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't understand data. How about Taco Bell? Who likes Taco Bell around here?
I do. Mm-hmm.
They're everywhere. They're owned by Pepsi.
They are. Very important news. Very important news, Taco Bell. The return of the Enchirito.
The Husawato?
The Enchirito. It's a Taco Bell invention. It's what brought me to Taco Bell in the first place. When I lived in California, I ate the Enchirito. It disappeared. It's coming back. This is important.
Yeah, but what about Mr. Doodle's mansion? The artist covered his mansion in
what
doodles.
About Cracker Barrel? Oh, this guy. I thought there was a restaurant.
Cracker Barrel. Was pretty good, too.
That would be a good name for a restaurant, though. I'd eat somewhere at Mr. Doodle's mansion.
Mr. Doodle's mansion?
Sure, I'd eat there.
So this guy in England has a mansion because he's an artist who has money, and he painted everything in it completely white, and then he doodled every possible surface. The video, you can play without sound. I don't know if it has sound or not. Doesn't matter.
I'm going to guess
this is a TikTok video.
This is kind of more ADHD than ADD. That would just be my guess. Holy
cow.
View
that post on Instagram. Yeah, view the post on Instagram.
That's psychotic.
It is.
Okay. Wow. And I feel sorry for his wife. Is this his wife?
That's his wife right there.
Mrs. Doodle?
Oh, you shouldn't have viewed that one.
Mr. Doodle the other one. Got married.
Go up. Mr. Doodle, on the Twitter. There's a tweet there. Go up. No. Go back to the story.
I just love following your directions. You know, that's what I live for on this show.
Now you're on the Guardian. You clicked on the wrong thing. You're on the Guardian. GC. I can't tell you anything. Very simple instructions to follow.
Ant, do you have a pick of the week?
Go to It's Mr. Doodle on Twitter, and you'll see him doodling his house. It's Mr. Doodle.
You don't need to see this.
Now we really have to see.
I need an aviation stat.
Here are Mr. and Mrs. Doodle in bed. He looks like a sweet
guy.
There you go.
Okay.
Oh, he's nuts.
Yeah, he is. Look at this.
What is he doodling with?
One of those big round pens.
Yeah. Is he going to get high from the fumes? I hope he's okay.
Wow. Oh, I think he started that way.
It's actually very cool.
It's claustrophobic as hell.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to live in this house. It's like Keith Haring lost his marbles.
Yeah, exactly. But
what happens when he's done?
He's done.
Gotta get a new house.
He is done.
Time for a new house.
You could just buy new furniture.
Or just a paint roller, as John says. You just roll over paint and roller. Start over.
Okay. All right.
Wow. Well, no, now his wife will color it all.
Wow. Yeah. You got to admire the kind of single-minded determination.
Oh, he buys the joke, Ben.
Did you see the 10-year-old who's selling his paintings for $150,000 to $200,000?
Yes. You know the NFTs?
No, they're regular paintings.
No, they're actual paintings.
And they're really good.
Nice.
They're not that good.
I think they're pretty good.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Leo's standard for art.
I'm going to show you his pictures. All right, who should we say would be the judge of this? He's a fifth grader, Andres Valencia. His paintings have sold for more than $125,000. Would you like to see a few of these? Look at that. They call him a little Picasso. I think he's kind of a genius, and he's not painting all of his house over. I want more pictures though. I want more pictures. Maybe the copyright, prohibits. He's selling his paintings in galleries to investors who think he's going to be the next guy.
Nice.
$230,000.
Young man.
Yep. He had a solo exhibit in Soho. All 35 works were sold. Look at this. This looks good, don't you think? That looks like good art. It's very Picasso-esque.
Not my thing, but hey, he can capitalize. Have at it.
I kind of think they're pretty good. Here I have.
Well,
I bought
get
one.
Some.
I thought maybe you should. I thought I spent. I only spent. I have to say, maybe this isn't his best one because I only spent like $50,000 on this. So it's just one of his paintings.
I love that one, man.
One of his paintings. Pretty good though, huh?
I love that
pretty
one.
Pretty good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. I like it. Maybe ran out of paint over there, but that's okay. Thank you very much for bringing that in.
Stacey, you were hidden for a moment there.
Horrifying. Ant, your pick of the week.
I didn't really have anything, but I came across this one.
That's fine. You could stop right there. Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I came across this on Petapixel.
We're hungry.
People having fun with Google Street View. And there's people that are going to the same spots wherever they are around.
She must
the world.
Like always go to this store, and Google caught her twice, nine years apart.
Right.
This wasn't on purpose.
I've been getting a couple of tweets from people saying that.
Or she has no life and it was on purpose.
I think she just lives in this corner. She says it's part of her 1 mile walk to work. It's just a coincidence, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But wow. Because you can't, you don't know ahead of time. Or do you?
You don't.
No.
You don't. My uncle is on the street view for where his house is. And
my dad's on
street view. Imagine in tiny town, South Kakilaki. Oh. You hear a car coming down the road and you see all of this.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, you know it's the Google car. So I was mooning. I just mooned it. I hope I'm going to get in, you know, get in the street view. But so far, no luck.
Lastly, this is October 2022. This is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So I'd like to encourage everyone to check out nationalbreastcancer.org or go find yourself a shirt such as like the one that I'm wearing today. If I got
let me see your shirt there, Aunt. Oh, I love it.
Oh, that's great.
That's beautiful. It's not pink either. It's a black with three fists, three different colors, and the purple. Of course, it's supposed to be pink, I think. And you're wearing
it's supposed to be pink.
You're wearing the pink. I see the bracelet too. The rubber.
Yeah, and I still have the bands.
Yeah, still have the bands.
Nice. You know, because we take this quite seriously here in the Pruitt family because we've had several people in the family affected by this. So
yeah.
We try to tell people to make sure they support that organization and get checked.
You bet.
Men and women.
You bet.
Yeah, go get your mammograms, ladies.
This is the one you're wearing. I think that
the black one looks really nice, actually.
I went with
the black one because I like the contrast, the way it shows off the diverse skin tones there. It's not just white people. It's everybody there.
Yep. Maybe I'll get a pink suit and wear it for the next show. I'd like to.
Barbie Core is in right now.
I always wanted a pink suit. You know, I was inspired. It's called Barbie Core. I love it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even if a guy does it, it's called Barbie Core.
I mean, that's the whole pink trend. Valentino has a lot of pink suits for women. I assume there's men's pink suits. Why not?
Maybe it's Ken Core. The new trend is going to be DeSantis' white boots.
Oh, did you see those? Did you see what the Twitter memes?
Oh, they're great.
DeSantis, of course, visiting the devastation, horrible devastation wrought by Hurricane Ian. But he decided to wear, I think perhaps mistakenly, wasn't a good fashion choice. White boots. Maybe that's all they had.
Well, I think they're just FEMA boots. Yeah, I think they just
FEMA
boots.
They're FEMA boots?
I know, but any chance to make fun of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a DeSantis fan. I'm just like, he showed up and they were like,
yeah.
I mean, when I was.
It's what others are wearing as well. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then, of course, the white boot meme.
Oh, this hilarious one.
Got engaged. This has less to do with technology than homeopathic medicines.
It really does, you guys. I'm like, are we really talking about his boots?
It's a meme.
We're talking about them.
They're kinky.
All right.
They're kinky boots.
Y'all are standing between me and an aviation, and I have been up since
6. Oh, you want some gin. I get it.
And I need the aviation.
All right. Stacey Higginbotham. We're going to let her go get drunk. Stacey on IoT.com, the fabulous website. The newsletter is free. Lots of events. And, of course, the very, very good podcast Stacey and Kevin do together called the IoT Podcast. And matter is the matter of the hour, I'm sure. If you want more matter conversation.
Oh, you know what? Well, I should have made this my pick. Oh, well. What? I got.
Save it for next week.
All right, yeah, that's good.
You're going to need one.
Put it on the rundown
unless you just throw in the towel and say, I'm never coming back, in which case, do it now.
I'm
here next week, but I'm not here the week after.
Did you get new earbuds? Those are nice. Are you wearing different earbuds? Those look good.
No, these are the same earbuds. Oh, okay. These are the Jabras.
They look good.
But they match my hair and
maybe
my
that's
scarf.
It. They match. They go very well with your couture.
My whole
That's
everything.
What it is. Okay.
Jeff Jarvis, he's the director of the Ten Light Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Former TV guy critic Frank Sinatra called him a bum. Ray Kroc called him a nickel millionaire. Murphy Brown called him a bottomless pit.
And go buy my book, pre-order my book at buy.bit.ly/buy.gutenberg.
bit.ly/buy.gutenberg. Bye-bye, Gutenberg. Aunt Pruitt, hands-on photography. What's coming up on Hop? What?
This week, we're getting back into the world of
Hello,
video.
You're sounding like a robot, Ant.
What?
Oh!
I think your mic might have gotten unplugged.
Oh, okay. Ant. He's unplugged, had robotomy. Oh, robotomy. El Jefe de Taco Bell does not take criticism well. Trapped in the jungle gym of life. He lived in tomato fields in New Jersey, formerly one of San Francisco's 100 most eligible bachelors. I want to add a clue on Jeopardy.
No, it wasn't.
Well, sort of. Sort of. They talked about the money that the examiner was going to give for what?
Oh, Skylab.
Thing. Well, the piece of the rocket.
Yeah,
for that Skylab. Fell to the ground.
Yeah. So that was your... In fact, somebody sent me a history or something of that, of Skylab with you talking on the radio about it.
Yeah,
from way back when. How you doing, Ann? Are you plugged that back in?
We can talk about homeopathic medicine until you're ready.
I don't want to kill Stacy. Even though it's just water, it could kill Stacy.
I'm like, oh man.
Okay, what about
mess up. You're all mess up.
Whatever it is, watch Hands-on Photography.
Hands-on Photography, twit.tv/hop. Don't forget Ant Pruitt, the website, antpruitt.com/prince. And on the Twitter and the Instagram, he's @_Pruitt.
This is Ant playing a meme now.
I love it.
A mime.
Yeah.
I blew that. It's
pronounced efficacy, I believe. Unless you're at Popeyes, in which case it's a fricassee. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for this week in Google. Goodbye. Goodbye. So long.
Don't miss All About Android every week. We talk about the latest news, hardware, apps, and now all the developer-y goodness happening in the Android ecosystem. I'm Jason Howell, also joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our newest co-host on the panel, Wen Tu Dao, who brings her developer chops. Really great stuff. We also invite people from all over the Android ecosystem to talk about this mobile platform we love so much. Join us every Tuesday, All About Android on twit.tv.